The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Powerful Dan Hardy. What's up, buddy?
How are you, man?
Thanks for coming by, man. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you. And the internet has been a buzz, you know?
Yeah.
It's been something. You're a misunderstood dude, man.
Am I?
You know? Yeah, I think so. A lot of people, especially seeing your trash talking and, you know, hyping up like the GSP fight and knocked a fake tan off you, people would think that you're an asshole. You're not an asshole at all. You're a super chill guy. Like, I don't think I've ever been around you and felt like, wow, this Dan Hardy's just too much. I got to get the fuck away from him. You're, like, really easy to get along with. You're a very friendly guy. You just are really good at talking shit when it comes down to fight time and pissing people off. And that really is something that people have to understand. You know, like, there's a pageantry involved in promoting a fight and in fucking with someone's head that you're going to fight. And it's people don't like it when other people are better at that aspect of fighting. You know, they get mad. Yeah. People get mad if you can talk mad shit about them. If they're not good at talking shit back, they go into the fight with it like a deficit already.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It was the culture I was brought up in, though. You know, like you know, banter between teammates at Roughhouse is pretty much bullying. I mean, it gets pretty serious, like, to where I'm sure some of the guys go home and cry after the session. It's, you know, so it's just kind of a natural thing for me. And then when somebody bites a little bit to a comment that I made, I can't help myself. It's too much fun.
It's very, English is very similar to Boston in that way. Mm. Boston has that same, like, you know, real insulting style to their trash talk within sports teams and athletes, and it's just part of the whole thing. And some people don't like it, and I could get that. I get that. There's some people want that Zen state Anderson Silva approach where you just go in, but people forget about Anderson Silva in Abu Dhabi. They forget when he was fighting with Damian Maia, calling him all kinds of shit in Portuguese. He was fucking with that dude's head while he was lighting him up, you know.
Yeah,
that's even crazy trash talk. The trash talk that goes on while you're kicking someone's ass.
Yeah. I remember watching him fighting Lee Murray. I was at the side of the cage in that fight, and the Tony Frickland one.
Oh, dude, you were there for that?
Yeah.
Oh my God. The people who haven't seen Anderson Silva became Anderson Silva when he went to Japan and when he went to England. Mm. Like, but England was really where it all came together for him. You know, like. Japan, he got some good fights, but he had some losses. You know, the Rio Chonin flying
that
heel
was
hook.
Weird, yeah,
I mean, he had some good fights. Who's that kid who was calling him Alex Diebling? The kid who's calling himself the Brazilian Killer.
Okay,
remember they all got pissed off at him.
Yeah.
Anderson, he beat him. He caught him with a high kick, and then he knocked out Carlos Newton. That was probably his most spectacular fight over there.
Yeah, but he flying knee, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was after Carlos dominated him on the ground. Carlos was very good, very advanced at that time. Like, he had, like, the most advanced ground game of guys that were fighting at high level. And he had Anderson down, he had mounted him, and it did not look like Anderson was getting up. But I think they gave him a yellow card or something like that. I don't know how they got stood back up again. I don't know what happened, but they got stood back up again. And bang, he hit him with a flying knee and knocked him out. And it was after that, he got his footing with a couple of good fights, but it wasn't until he went to England and fought in Cage Rage that's when he became Anderson Silva.
Mm. He was so comfortable. I really felt watching the Lee Murray fight that he could have stopped it at any point. You know, he was really just kind of torturing him a little bit and beating him up.
Yeah,
Lee Murray's tough.
He was beating the fuck out of Lee Murray.
Yeah.
He was fucking his legs up, man. And, you know, and Murray is tough as shit.
Yeah.
He hung in there, man, the entire time.
Well, he stabbed like 38 times or something.
Yeah, and was training 6 weeks later. He made a video about him hitting the mitt 6 weeks later. If people don't know who we're talking about, this guy is like really a legitimate folklore type character.
He's a Guy Ritchie movie character.
Yeah, he's almost greater than a Guy Ritchie character, because you would never believe a Guy Ritchie character really could be like a top MMA fighter and also one of the greatest armed robbery suspects in the history of the universe.
No, it's pretty crazy. I remember sitting in traffic on the way to Cage Rage. I had Paul Daly in the car, and like stuck in traffic, but not far from the arena. And Lee Murray just racing up the hard shoulder in his I think it was a BMW or something, like 70 miles an hour, just.
He was crazy.
Yeah. Did you see him falling out with Matt Lindland? after that fight. Lindlum fought a cage rage, and they brought Murray in to kind of hype up a fight between the two.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Lee Murray was, you're a fucking monkey. You look like a fucking monkey. And it was, and Matt Lindlum was just, he didn't even think it was real. It was pretty hilarious. Lee Murray's like throwing stuff at him.
Well, he was real.
Yeah.
He just really was that crazy.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for something to do this summer, you might want to check out some of the upcoming fights. Even better, if you can catch them up close in person. It's quite an experience. But if you want to get the best seats, you have to act fast. And that's true for a lot of things in life, especially when it comes to hiring for your business. You need to hire the most talented people you can before the competition scoops them up. And to do that, you need ZipRecruiter. And luckily, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Got your eye on a rock star candidate? ZipRecruiter's invite to apply feature lets you cut the line. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. So, amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan to try it for free right now. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. For most of the year, fancy underwear technology sounds unnecessary. Breathable, quick dry, moisture wicking, anti-odor. It's a bit overkill, right? But then summer hits and the heat comes. Suddenly, all that sounds pretty damn essential. Be prepared for summer like me with MeUndies. So far, I love the items that I've gotten from them. They're all soft, comfortable, and flattering. I recommend it hands down, and don't worry, MeUndies has a cut for every guy with over 10 different styles, ranging from boxer briefs to jock straps to the new and improved ball caddy. Plus, they come in over 100 different colors and prints, ranging from black to all over sharks. No matter what pair you get, it'll have MeUndies' signature super soft micro-modal fabric. It is amazing. So everything is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy. They also offer some of the most summer-proof fabric. So breathe. It's perfect for working out or just keeping you cool on those really hot days. And if you're not happy with your first pair of underwear, it's on MeUndies. Summer is coming. Be prepared with my favorite underwear, MeUndies. Comfort for the outside in. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Rogan. That's MeUndies.com/Rogan. Tap the banner to learn more.
And then a dude comes along like that.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky that he didn't come along in like the Dark Ages. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, yeah. He would have...
I'm sure there were people like him, though.
Fuck yeah, there were! That guy would have had, like, the scariest gang ever. If back when there was, like, very little rules, you could have swords and shit. Oh, my goodness.
It'd have run like a bunch of outlaws in the forest.
You gotta think, man, that time in our lives in for the human race, that was only, like, 1,000 years ago. Yeah. That's not that long ago, man. It's like...
Medieval
yeah,
shit.
That's not that long ago. That's so recent. Yeah. The DNA is still there.
Public beheadings and
yeah.
stuff.
And every now and then, you get some straight lineage type shit. You get a dude who just has basically barbarian genes, and he's walking amongst regular folks here in 2013.
Yeah.
He's not playing by any rules. He's got no rules. He's just going for it until he hits a wall, just full clip until he hits a wall. Mm-hmm. It's important to know that it's possible that a guy like that could exist.
Yeah.
And people get romantic about it and upset, but you could not get upset about it today. You can not get romantic about it today. You could, you know, say, oh, you know, you're glorifying something. You're glorifying something pathetic. You know, what if this guy inspires other kids to live that way? Okay. But make no mistake about it. 100 years from now, it's going to be an awesome story. Okay. But 200 years ago, when you're not connected from now, like when we're not connected to it emotionally, it's going to be an awesome story.
Yeah. But we study these people now, though. I mean, look at like, you know, like Bronson.
A lot of folks don't know that documentary, the Bronson documentary.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
Chopper was really weird too.
Yeah, but those, but they're those kind of people.
Yeah,
know? Like Lee Murray's got to have a movie made about him or something.
Oh fuck yeah, unquestionably. Yeah. And he could fucking fight, man. He could fight.
Yeah,
I saw him fight Amir Rinavardi.
Yeah,
starched him, man. Like, brutal. I mean, it was so ruthless. His right hand was fucking nasty. Mm. He was really, really sharp striker, really powerful guy. I mean, he wasn't like the most technical guy, which is where Anderson picked him apart.
Yeah.
You know, he was
such fast hands, though.
He was very fast and very confident, very confident. You know, it took a guy like Anderson to sort of pick him apart, a guy who just was clearly Anderson's on some another. He's on some next level in like every department.
Yeah.
He's on some next level physical shit. He's on some next level mental shit. He's on some next level confidence shit. He's on some next level success shit. He really feels like he's magic. He feels like he can go in there and just do shit to people.
But he can, and he does.
He can, and he does. You're right. So he's like that. It takes a guy like that to do that to a guy like Lee Murray.
Yeah.
You know, a guy like, when you see Anderson like at his best, it's one of the weirdest things. Because you can't believe a guy can do what he just did. You know? Like when he fucked up, when we were there in Brazil and he fought Stefan Bonner, dude, that was like I was watching a movie.
Yeah.
It was like the guy just put his back to the cage and let him tee off on him and then brought him back in, got to the center and brought him right back in, puts his hands down, stands right in front of him, and then when he decides to strike, throws him to the ground and buries him with one knee.
Yeah.
And you're like, Jesus.
Yeah. But it was like the Forrest Griffin fight, though.
Yeah.
You know, he'd been baiting him to, like overextend on his punches.
Yeah.
All the way through the round. And then as soon as he did it and crossed his feet,
he just...
That was surreal.
Yeah. He's a master. Mm. He's a real master.
It's kind of an honor to be around witnessing it live. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's an honor to be able to call it, for sure. It's really shocking. His abilities are very shocking. But you know, one day we're going to look back at him and we're going to look at some new guy, just the way people used to look at Sugar Ray Robinson and Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah.
Sugar Ray Robinson was amazing, but I think Roy Jones Jr. is probably would have lit him up like a Christmas tree. I don't think he would have even been able to fuck with him. He wouldn't have been able to find him.
But then look at Mayweather.
Yeah.
As much as I dislike the guy.
Yeah. Beautiful, you know, boxer.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Amazing.
Roy, the problem with Roy was all that John Ruiz fight.
Mm.
He went up in weight and won the heavyweight fight.
That documentary was good, though. Did you watch it?
What is it?
The documentary about his training for that.
Oh, no, yeah. I didn't.
It was really interesting. He got this little old white dude doing all his strength and conditioning.
Wow.
And
was it Mackie weird. Shillstone?
Is that his name?
Mackie Shillstone, yeah, is the guy. Well, let me see if I'll pull it up.
Name, I think,
he's the guy who trained. Spinks, Michael Spinks, for his heavyweight fights with Larry Holmes.
Yeah.
And then again for Tyson, I think.
Huh.
Yeah.
I remember watching. It was one of the HBO
Mackie
shows.
Shillstone.
One of the HBO shows with Roy Jones preparing for a fight, and it was when I was training at Legends. And there was this shot where he was training to run DMC, and he's like doing his shadow boxing to the rhythm of the music. So I was immediately downloaded Run DMC and started doing it at the gym in the Ring of Legends.
Wow.
It was a good time.
Yeah, he.
Mackie Shillstone, right?
Yeah, he worked with Roy Jones.
Yeah, he was an interesting character.
Well, it's interesting because what happened was then Roy, he looked spectacular in the Ruiz fight, but then he drops down to fight Antonio Tarver. He has to lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Because he's a 205-pound, 206-pound guy now. I mean, he was a small heavyweight, but I think he got above 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Which, to drop all the way the fuck down to 175 again, that is a big deal.
It is.
It's way easier to talk your body into getting bigger than it is to talk your body into getting smaller.
Yeah.
Like, you have to fucking starve yourself.
Especially in a sport like boxing, where you've got to, you know, continuously work for a long period of time.
Yeah, he looked completely different in that fight physically. Like, his body looked deflated, you know?
Yeah.
Like, cutting weight like that, it just ruined him. And then he got knocked out by Tarver, and then he got knocked out again, even scarier, by Glenn Johnson.
Mm.
And those fights, I think, a direct result of him weakening himself to drop down to 175 pounds, or a direct result also of whatever the fuck he took to get up to 200-plus pounds, not being in his system anymore, and his system crashes, which is what happens, especially if you're like in your late 30s and you're a pro athlete who's getting head trauma on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Those are all things designed to lower your testosterone, all those things. You know, it's almost like nature has it set up like you can only get hit in the head so many times for it just, okay,
looking,
slow the fuck down, bitch. Jesus Christ. like literally slows down your testosterone from head trauma. It's like, yeah. Look, we got to figure out a way to stop getting hit in the head. And maybe this asshole is just too aggro. Nature doesn't know that you got a fucking fighting career to think about.
Yeah, I hated watching him fight Calzaghe.
Yeah, did you?
I don't particularly like Calzaghe either, and it was just rough to watch.
He's a shell of himself. He's a shell of himself. I don't think Calzaghe could have hung with Roy when Roy was in his prime. No. When Roy fought Vinny Pazienza, it was the first fight ever recorded where the opponent did not land a single punch. He went through a whole round boxing with Vinny Pazienza when Pazienza was in his prime, and Pazienza swinging for fucking fences and getting nothing for a whole round.
Wow.
I mean, that's insane. You're both punching, and this guy hits you 60 times and you hit him zero. That's insane.
We should get Anderson Silva to break that record, like number of punches missed in a round or something.
Well, what you need with an Anderson Silva, you're going to need a Roy Jones-type dude to beat Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
You're going to need a guy who's got that kind of, but with Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Those guys are out there, man. They're out there. They just got to put it together. We all knew, like, you came up doing martial arts, like, a good portion of your life, right?
Mm, yeah.
So you must have went to, like, karate tournaments and saw, like, those few young kids that were super talented where everybody was like, God damn. But sometimes they never come to fruition. Mm. You know, they never become the martial arts legends that they could have been.
In my experience with that, though, people that find it that easy and pick it up that quickly usually lose interest.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. It's kind of frustrating. There's only a very few that stick with it.
Yeah.
And that's when you get someone like Anderson Silva.
Or John Jones.
Or John Jones, yeah.
Yeah. There's those guys who have that the lethal combination of, like, dedication and that freak.
And skill.
And freak bodies, man. So people can do some freak shit. Yeah. There's certain dudes that, like, John Jones can do some freak shit to people.
Mm.
You know, like, he can, you know, he's spinning elbows, people in the head. He's giant. You can't get a hold of him. He out-wrestles everybody.
He's all limbs, though, isn't he?
I mean, all limbs!
I can't imagine throwing any strike at him that wouldn't hit something sharp.
It'd
be like kicking a bag of wrenches.
Yeah. He's fucking scary right now. Dude is scary right now. He's on this next level scary shit right now, where he's just... like, so confident, decides to maul Chael Sonnen.
He's like 15 or something.
I think he's just turned 24 or 25.
I'm getting old, man.
Yeah, well, it is a young man's game.
It is.
What is this condition that pulled you out of your next fight?
The wolf heart thing.
What is it called?
Is that called like a baboon heart?
Yeah, it's exactly the same, yeah.
what does it mean?
It's called Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome, but I don't have the syndrome because I've never had any symptoms. I only have pattern, which means that I have a second heartbeat, but it's never caused a problem.
You have a second heartbeat?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, in the center of your heart, you've got, like, the regular pacemaker. It's a bunch of cells that, you know, they create electrical impulse to keep the heart beating.
Mm-hmm.
And with WPW, people have other cells in the upper parts of the heart that do the same thing. And usually what they would do is they go in, it's called an ablation, they kind of go into the femoral artery and they can burn them out and stuff.
Wow.
But people have that done when they have, like, symptoms, you know, when they have, like, palpitations and dizziness and, like, people have panic attacks and stuff. I've never had anything, nothing at all.
Oh.
So what they're telling me at the moment, I mean, I've got to go back and get some more tests done for, like, a second opinion with a different person. But basically the way I understand it right now is if I want to continue fighting to get cleared, I have to have the ablation. But because I've never had any symptoms and I'm perfectly fine, I don't see the point in letting someone go and start burning my shit.
That sounds like something they were probably not going to do in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to go, well, back when we used to go in there and burn it out, we realized that's actually a mistake.
Yeah.
That was actually, you know, the human body figured it out and everything was cool and running smooth and we were being ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, if it was causing a problem,
right,
and that's the solution, then I would have it done, but it's not.
So their concern is that if they license you, and this is a potential issue, a health issue?
Well, there was that soccer player a few years ago. I think he played for, like, Chelsea or something, and he had a heart attack on the pitch and died. He was, like, 28.
Really?
And basically the problem is that the main heart rate can only go up to about 220 beats a minute, but the secondary cells that produce the second heart rate, the heartbeat, is... that's limitless. That can go to whatever. So, it, you know, like, if I'm at 12 minutes into the fight and I'm, you know, full of adrenaline and completely exhausted, and my heart rate can't keep up, there's a potential for the other one to kind of take over.
And he can give you a heart attack.
Yeah. But you know, the chances decrease after 25, and the chance of it happening is like 0.6%. So, you know.
Well, you also have like a really low resting heart rate.
Yeah, 42.
That's very
low.
It
was when I got the tests. So, yeah.
Michael Bisping's is like 34.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's incredible, man. Yeah.
He doesn't have to feed his brain, though, don't forget.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Bisping knows I'm kidding.
He might have, like, the lowest working heart rate, you know, the resting heart rate of anybody in the UFC. Mm.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
That's work. You only get that from work.
He's that kind of guy, though. He's always, like, switched on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a fit motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very interesting what you said about like natural talent and then the guys with natural talent. It's oftentimes they're the ones who for whatever reason don't work as hard.
Well, Bisping was that guy that had the talent and
yeah.
He's just a natural fighter. His whole family are just tough guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I started training with Mike before he'd even had his first fight. And I was training with his coach, and his coach had actually invested money in like bringing him down to Nottingham to train. To like, because he was a DJ at the time. I don't know whether most people know this, but he's, you know, DJ Mikey B. and you know, he was like in that, you know, the dance and the rave scene, and he was, you know, all that kind of stuff, the glow sticks and shit. So my instructor like bought him a car and brought him down to Nottingham and like fed him and stuff with the intention of making him an MMA star.
Wow!
Because he had this natural ability, and he's just a tough guy.
He's a very tough guy. You know, you knock that dude out, he gets up and he's like, I want a rematch.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. Like, that guy doesn't lose any steam if he loses.
No.
Like, he just goes back to the drawing board, dusts himself off, heals up, and has exactly the same style the next fight. Yeah. Even better.
He's got a sprinkling of that barbarian in him.
Yeah. You know, fuck him. Yeah. There's a lot of that shit out there, man. Yeah. Well, a lot of that barbarian blood. Yeah. It's out there. So, what are you going to do now?
Well, I'm going to go back and get some more tests done. Lorenzo has a special cardiologist that he wants me to go and see, so I'm going to get that done and just kind of see what my options are. I don't see the point in having a surgery done if I have to have it done to carry on fighting.
It seems scary.
It just seems pointless to me, especially because, you know, like...
Is it risky?
Well, the problem is that they don't know whereabouts in my heart it is.
Oh, Jesus. They got to go look for this.
They've
got
to go and look for it. So they didn't say they could fix it. They said they want to study it.
They want to study it.
They want to study it. And they wanted to study this 4 weeks before the fight. So they wanted me to go in and have something put up the inside artery of both my legs and one into my neck so they can go in and try and find it.
They put you under while you're doing this? Or you're just chilling?
So.
Fuck is that, Dan Hardy?
Like an experiment.
How's that possible? You're just lying there?
I think so, yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
That is so not cool.
So the guy was like, oh, so we'll do that, and if we can find it, we can fix it, and then you'll be able to, you know, take a week off and then go back to training.
Who the fuck thinks you could just chill while they send these, like, wire worms up your arteries or to peek inside your fucking heart?
My dad said he had to get that thing up his penis hole. When he turn
Jesus
a certain age,
son.
I think it's 60, you have to get
artery.
That in your penis.
Definitely.
Fuck that.
I've had people tweeting me and stuff, and they're like, you know, my 6-year-old had it done. Stop being such a pussy and get on with it.
How dare you?
We have more time.
There's people that just can't wait to be cunty, Dan Hardy. And you got to feel sorry for them because.
Yeah. I'm like a magnet for them.
Of course. You're a brash young man. You talk a lot of shit, and people, that's how they, one of the things that people like about it, it generates interest. You know how much hate Chael Sonnen must get?
Oh.
All day, every day?
Yeah.
All day, every day. His Twitter must be a mess.
Yeah, but he's got the bank account to match it, though, so it's all
yeah,
right.
Well,
I haven't, so that's the problem with me, you know.
Yeah, he really talked himself into some great situations.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the best shit talker ever.
He is.
He's exciting to watch. Like, I love, like, interviewing him at a weigh-in, because I know he's going to say some crazy shit.
Yeah, that's the kind of shit that's going to go down in history.
Fuck yeah.
I always remember one line he said when he was preparing for Anderson. I'm not sure which time it was. And he said, he is the champion, but I am the best.
Yeah.
That's a great line.
Yeah.
You know? I want to use that every day at some point.
Yeah. I mean, And he's so good even after he loses in selling another fight like that.
Yeah.
Just think about what happened. The dude got starched by Anderson Silva. And then he says, you know what? Anderson Silva is only the beginning. I'm going to go after the light heavyweight champion. And like all of a sudden, he's fighting the light heavyweight champion. I mean, he goes from losing a shot at the middleweight belt to fighting for the light heavyweight belt.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's
and,
impressive.
Yeah. It was. And Dana's like, well, he's the one who asked for that fight. Like, I understand that.
He is a politician, though, you know.
Yeah, I understand that he's the one that asked for that fight. But that's, I mean, you got to respect the guy's ability to sell shit.
Yeah.
I mean, he could sell a fucking pay-per-view, man. I mean, the dude just lost to Anderson Silva, and there was white people all over the world convinced that he had a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
There was white people all over the world that was looking forward to him winning, you know?
Yeah.
He's such what a character. What a funny, smart guy.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy that could knock on your door at like 8 a.m. and you're like, you wake up out of bed all tired and shit, and then
he's selling
next, time, next time you close the door and you bought 3 vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, no kidding, man. But he can fight too, man.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
can fight. Yeah. It's just he ran into two buzzsaws, two of the greatest fighters of the generation, and Anderson. And I mean, look what he did to Anderson in the first fight. You can't take that away from him, even if Anderson was injured. That was an incredible performance.
It was.
He was minutes away from winning the title.
Mm.
He fucked up in that final round, but he was
close.
Do you
think he carries that with him, though? Do you think that?
It's hard to say he doesn't. It's harder to say he doesn't than to say he does.
That would
because
he get me,
to
that
say
would.
He does, you get all this evidence: the Paulo Filho fight, this fight. But the other thing is, he's just playing at a real high level, and this kind of shit happens. You're at a real fucking high level.
Yeah.
And if you look at how it happens, in every other fight, it happened in a way that sort of makes sense to him. Like Anderson Silva caught him with a triangle. That sort of makes sense to him. He missed that spinning back fist and he got caught. That sort of makes sense. But the John Jones fight didn't make any sense. The John Jones fight was a mauling.
Mm.
John just took him down and mauled him. Mm. And I think that was like the most disappointing for him.
Yeah.
Because he's a very good fighter, man. If you look at the way he submitted Brian Stann, you know, that's a scary dude.
Mm.
Chael Sonnen's a beast.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
Those A guys are just a step better. And that's what it is. It's just a step better. That's all they need to be.
So what's your opinion on fighters accusing each other using steroids?
This episode is brought to you by Me Undies. For most of the year, fancy underwear technology sounds unnecessary. Breathable, quick dry, moisture wicking, anti-odor. It's a bit overkill, right? But then summer hits and the heat comes. Suddenly, all that sounds pretty damn essential. Be prepared for summer like me with Me Undies. So far, I love the items that I've gotten from them. They're all soft, comfortable, and flattering. I recommend it hands down. And don't worry, Me Undies has a cut for every guy with over 10 different styles, ranging from boxer briefs to jock straps to the new and improved ball caddy. Plus, they come in over 100 different colors and prints, ranging from black to all over sharks. No matter what pair you get, it'll have Me Undies' signature super soft micro modal fabric. It is amazing. So everything is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy. They also offer some of the most summer-proof fabric. So breathe. It's perfect for working out or just keeping you cool on those really hot days. And if you're not happy with your first pair of underwear, it's on Me Undies. Summer is coming. Be prepared with my favorite underwear, Me Undies. Comfort from the outside in. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Rogan. That's MeUndies.com/Rogan. Tap the banner to learn more. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Springtime is all about freshness. You got fresh air, fresh starts, freshly cleaned homes. And as you're getting your home in order, it might be a good time to take a fresh look at SimpliSafe home security. I think they're one of the best options out there, and so do a lot of others. SimpliSafe is loved by customers and experts alike. It was even named Best Home Security Systems of 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. And here's why I think you'll like it. The system blankets your whole home in protection. That includes advanced sensors and cameras to help detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, with 24/7 professional monitoring, you can rest easy knowing you'll get a fast emergency response when you need it most. Monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time. SimpliSafe has given many people a real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So try it out risk-free with no contract and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/JRE. That's simplisafe.com/JRE. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Well, I think we both know that in every sport in the world where there's money involved, people are going to do everything they can in order to be victorious.
No doubt.
That is just the way it is. There are people who hold principle higher than they hold money, and I know for a fact I had a long conversation with John Fitch once about it, and John Fitch, I guarantee you that guy never used anything, ever. He's just, for him, it was a principle issue.
Yeah.
But that's not everybody. We both know it's not everybody. A lot of guys have used stuff. A lot of guys have used stuff, and they've said, well, you know, I'm just trying to get over an injury, and I'm just going to use it to get over this knee injury. Yeah, that too. You're doing that too. But also, look, you realize when you're around a certain amount of, like, really strong wrestler-type dudes, you go, okay, there's nothing I can do to keep this guy off me. I got to get fucking stronger, period. Yeah. If I want to stay in this game, I got to get stronger. I don't know how the fuck he got that strong, but I got to get stronger. And it's really hard to get stronger naturally, quick. Naturally, the shit takes years, you know? It takes, like, 4 or 5 years to put on a good 20 pounds of, like, real raw muscle. Or we can do it this way. And everybody's doing it, and then you go, okay, if everybody's doing it.
People can kind of justify it to themselves because other people are doing it. You know
what
I mean? It's like everybody enables each other.
Yeah, I don't think, I think there's certainly an issue and there's certainly a discussion to be had. And especially in for testosterone replacement therapy, that's a big one. That to me is a big one because that one, for a lot of folks who don't know, like young fighters, in their early 30s, even some guys younger than that, take testosterone, which is really kind of crazy. Like your body should be producing testosterone in healthy quantities, like deep into your 30s. It starts to drop off when you start hitting 40. If you're like,
but very slowly,
yeah, but
very small numbers.
Yes, and if you're fit and if you're eating healthy and if you know you're sleeping right, you should be okay. So when you find guys that are like 30 and they're taking testosterone replacement therapy, you go, okay, what are you doing? Because what you're doing right now is you're putting testosterone into your body that doesn't exist. So does it not exist because you've been hit too many times? Which we both know is also a real possibility. In fact, this guy, Dr. Mark Gordon, who worked with James Toney's, he's done a lot of work on that, showing how traumatic brain injury to both soldiers and people who do extreme sports, the traumatic brain injury has a significant impact on your body's ability to produce testosterone.
So I could knock the testosterone out of somebody.
Well,
I mean,
I don't
like
think
a little girl.
Jill Sonnen's picking that line up.
It's not a situation where it happens in one night. It's a situation where you're beating yourself up. You know, if I've never fought an MMA fight, but I've watched you guys train, and you know, I see the amount of hours that it takes in a day to do a real proper 6-week camp. And for folks who don't know, it's insane. It's insane. It's fucking madness.
Yeah, it is.
And I think some guys think the only way they can get through that is with some help.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get through that, then what are you going to do when you get in there with a guy like GSP when you know he has gone through that? You're like, well, fuck, you know, you're doomed. You're going to keep up with him for a little bit, but eventually he's going to steamroll you.
Yeah.
There's just no getting around it. If you don't do what everybody else is doing, how can you compete?
Unless I dress like an alien. With GSP.
Oh, with GSP. GSP has a thing about aliens. Yeah. Just terrified of aliens. Yeah, I wonder if he hates fighting dudes with alien wear in their trunk.
I know. What if it was just alien wear the whole time?
just a big marketing scam.
He's getting hired by
alien wear sponsors a lot of fighters. You know, maybe GSP has a deal. Then they can't have them wear that thing on their pant. They wear that thing to scare me? No.
Have you rewatched that? Rewatch it. It's so
interesting. It's amazing.
Interesting.
It's amazing. He's awesome. I love that guy. He's awesome. That was a beautiful interview, man. It really was. He's a guy who he's kept his humility better than any champion I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I've been up to Montreal a couple of times to work with him. And the first time I went up there, I didn't know how they were going to receive me, you know, because obviously, you know, I did say a few things about a few people in his camp during the preparation. And
the fake tan off the line was fucking outstanding.
Thank you. So they asked me to go up for a week to spar with him, and I thought they were just going to take me and just kind of beat me up a little bit and throw me out. But I was up for it anyway. It was going to be an experience. And when I got there, everyone was really cool. I felt, you know,
great.
Yeah, was really cool. And GSP is by far the most humble and deserving champion I've ever met.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
He's like, there's no one like him when it comes to like MMA champions. No. He's like he's a sweet guy, like real nice to people.
Yeah. And he handles it really well, his lifestyle, because obviously he gets a lot of attention all the time, and it's exhausting.
And he still, no matter how much attention he has, he's still the same guy. He's not. He doesn't fall into it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real issue with folks. They fall into that, you know. Yeah. They get caught up.
It was kind of funny going up there the first time, because I still had a mohawk the first time, and he goes out, like, most nights. He, like, loves to be out in clubs and stuff. He doesn't drink and any of that. But obviously, you can imagine how much attention he gets in Montreal. And, so he's walking through the club, and everybody like looks over him, like staring at him, and then they notice me behind him, and they're like, the look of confusion on their face, like
we got hoodwinked. These motherfuckers like each other. That's funny, man. That's funny. Yeah, you know, it all trickled down from the top. That Firas the Hobby guy. That's a smart dude.
He is.
A very, very smart dude. Yeah. Very clever. And the way he runs his show is no bullshit, you know?
And John Danaher as well.
Fuck yeah.
People don't talk about this guy enough.
You're right, right.
In the hotel that I was staying at, my room was opposite his, so, like, he was the last person I'd see before heading to bed at night. And we stood and had long conversations in the corridor. The guy's fascinating and really, really strange.
Really, really strange and really, really fascinating.
Yeah.
We went to dinner with him, me, him, and Eddie Bravo, like a Denny's or some shit like that.
Amazing.
And we just broke down the universe together. John Danaher is a beast, man.
He's amazing.
He's so fucking smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually how I went. That's how I wound up doing Taekwondo with George.
Okay.
And teaching him how to throw the turning sidekick correctly. Mm-hmm. It's from John Danaher. Like, Danaher was asking me if I knew any high-level Taekwondo guys that can teach George the proper mechanics of the spinning back kick.
Okay.
And I felt like such an asshole saying, like, yeah, I can show you how to do it, right? You know, it sounds like such a Hollywood douche move. Like, oh, yeah, you know, you're going to teach George fucking St. Pierre how to throw a kick. But to his credit, he actually listened to me. Mm. Like, I couldn't believe he tried it, you know? Because I wouldn't have listened to me. I'd be like, yeah, bitch, all right. I'll go watch you kick a bag of fucking fruitcake. Fucking actor weirdo. But George was like super like humble and eager to learn. Mm-hmm. He's a really unusual dude.
Yeah.
It's weird how many different like the way people perceive like MMA fighters or even jiu-jitsu athletes or kickboxers, the way people perceive like people who compete in combat sports and the way they really are is so different. Mm. Like some of my favorite people of all time that I've ever met have been fighters, because there's something about the type of character that you need to have to be able to test yourself in such an extreme environment. Like, that's a rare quality. Mm. It's a very rare quality. And there's some people mistake it with being a barbaric thing, because they think that somehow or another we should not be violent because violence is bad. And even though it's a competition and they both agree to do it and they can be respectful, it still seems like it's anti-societal.
Yeah.
But they don't understand. They just haven't experienced anything like really intense themselves, yeah. and known that there's only one way to develop like real character and have confidence in that real character. Yeah. You got to put yourself in fire.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of MMA fighters are interesting people because, yeah. I mean, you know, after a certain amount of time of being in the gym and being so focused on yourself, you become very self-aware.
Yeah,
and then you know usually from that comes a lot of self-confidence and you know just being very comfortable in different environments, which usually means you stand out because you kind of put that out there when you walk into a room.
And you're not worried about physical confrontation anymore, so you calm down.
But you also
don't
feel like you have anything to prove either.
Exactly. And that's the real issue with a lot of guys is the need to prove dominance, the need to prove. But guys who have had martial arts backgrounds, they don't have that need. They can chill. They can relax. They're way easier to be around.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen shit start up between, like, maybe Brazilian dudes have. Maybe some Brazilian dudes have jumped each other.
Yeah, I was watching a video the other day with like, and Wanderlei Silva was in it. It was two guys fighting in the dressing room in like.
Yeah,
like
Wanderlei Silva and Charles Crazy Horse Bryant.
No. It was two other guys, and like Wanderlei was cornering one of them.
Oh yeah, that was Cristiano Marcelo, and
in a triangle.
Yeah, he got him in a triangle and put him to sleep. And that was, but it was Charles Crazy Horse Bryant, and Crazy Horse actually got up. The legend is, and sucker punched Wanderlei and knocked him out cold. And it was right before Wanderlei was supposed to fight Ricardo Arona.
Yeah.
And Wanderlei literally got knocked out, got woke up, and that sent out to, this is if you're going to believe Charles Crazy Horse Bryant, which I wonder if he's telling the truth, man, because Crazy Horse was nuts.
Yeah, he was.
And he could knock a motherfucker out.
Yeah.
He had a serious punch. Crazy Horse could punch fucking hard.
Yeah.
Enough to easily knock out a 185-pounder if he sucker punched him.
Did you ever see that fight where he tore that stuffed bear apart in the corner?
Yeah. Well, he would get to the top of the cage and do backflips off the top of the cage. He was like the first dude doing that.
Or like sit on the the corner post.
Yeah,
like
just jump up and sit up there during the fight.
Yeah.
He would sucker punch guys like in the middle of a round, just wham, and just knock them out cold with like a punch that you don't think should land.
Head full of gold teeth.
Yeah.
And a balaclava when he's doing his interviews for Pride. Remember that? Remember when he was fighting Mishima and he was calling him Mishy Marsh?
Yeah.
And he had a black, just his eyes showing and gold teeth.
Yeah. And he who was the fighter that while the referee is reading the instructions, he's like mugging to the camera with his big giant smile of gold teeth? He was another character right out of a fucking movie.
Yeah, he was.
Constantly getting arrested, constantly going. I hung out with that dude. Me and him and Eddie Bravo hung out with him and his girlfriend. We watched some fights together. It was when K-1 did an event in, I think it was K-1, did an event in Hollywood in some soccer stadium, some outdoor stadium. And just by chance, we sat right next to each other. I had a great time with that dude. That dude was hilarious.
Yeah.
We were just laughing at everything. He's a wild motherfucker. Yeah.
It's kind of cool sometimes when you get exposed to one of those people just for a few hours. Like,
yeah.
I had a car journey like from Hollywood to Temecula and back with Mayhem.
Yeah.
And it was like one of the most high-speed, scariest rides I've ever been on. Like, he's, like, sitting in the driver's seat with a shirt with, like, guns all over it and a big chain with a gun on it, sunglasses on, and he's just, like, speeding. And every now and then he's like, police tracker thing will beep and he'll, like, hit the brakes and, like, swerving in and out and talking 100 miles an hour. Like, and it's, like, 2 hours from here, isn't it? So I have 4 hours of that as well as a training session in the middle. I was exhausted by the time I got home.
You're lucky to be alive.
I needed like 3 days.
I hung out with Clay Guida one weekend in Chicago, and he took me to my show. He insisted on taking me to my show. So it was me and him and Eddie Bravo, and Clay Guida was driving. Clay Guida drives like he fights. He drives exactly like he fights.
Probably like
just
Mayhem,
sitting there, just going, whoa. Like, I trust him. I think he knows what he's doing.
Oh, Sam Tripoli. I just got back from driving with him.
San Francisco. You let Sam drive?
He is the scariest man. He's just like sideswiping cars while texting and talking on the phone.
Oh,
and, like,
you let him text and drive?
No, he was just out of control. It's so funny, man. I was scared out of my mind.
That's fucking bad, man.
And I gave him my car to drive up to San Francisco. And I was like, I didn't know how bad it was. And then when I was up there, I was like, oh shit, he has to drive home. And I was like, oh please, Tony, just please drive most of the time. And
oh, that's hilarious. So they drove your car up?
Yeah, and back.
Wow, god damn, that's a long ride. How much is a Southwest flight? It's like $100, you cheap fucks.
No, it was like I spent like $500 round trip for going up there for some reason. I don't know if it was because of Cinco de Mayo or whatever. Or,
probably,
or
right. What, they jack up rates
yeah.
when shit like that goes
and on. And Southwest doesn't go direct to San Francisco.
They don't?
No. Isn't that
really?
Weird? Yeah.
That's crazy. I know they go to San Jose.
Yeah.
That's not far from San Francisco. You could do San Jose, and then you drive for like 30 minutes.
Well, I was going to do Oakland, but you have to take that stupid thing underneath the ocean.
Don't
I was
do
like,
that. Don't do that.
You've already
do that.
Scared me enough to never do that.
The BART? Have you ever done the BART in San Francisco? We were filming Fear Factor in Oakland, and I ate a pot cookie or something in my hotel room because I was hanging out with the crew, and they were really cool guys. But, you know, I was like, I have this cookie, and let me just say, it'll probably make it more interesting to hang out with these people. So I take this, it's not an insult, they were straight, is my point. Like, I couldn't say, hey, who wants some pot cookies? They'd be like, oh, not me. Oh, no, you're not going to get me any of that. What are you, crazy? I don't think so, pal.
Oh, you meant straight, like they don't
straight.
Do drugs.
Yeah, they don't
I
fuck around.
I thought you were pissed because they were straight.
No, yeah, I was like, well, I couldn't have gay sex with them.
Let's go eat this cookie.
No, they were, you know, they're straight arrows. Like, you could offer them a drink. Yeah, I'll have a margarita. You know, they get crazy. Yeah. I'll have a margarita. But if you're like, who wants to eat some hash? Fuck, get the fuck away from me. So I ate this pot cookie, and I get on this BART thing, man, and I am flying. I just totally overmodulated. Sometimes you don't know what the fuck you're eating. You just eat one, and it just puts you in almost like in another dimension. It's like your face is under a waterfall, you're like about to peer through the other side. You just can't quite get there, like that high. And my ears are ringing. I'm like... are popping. I'm like, why are my ears popping? And they go, because we're 500 feet underwater.
Oh, fuck.
And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I would have never said yes to this. If you asked me, do you want to go in a fucking tube that's under the ocean in a place where the ground moves, I would have said, fuck you. I don't want to do that. Yeah. Why are we doing that? That's like playing musical chairs.
You know, I can catch a train from my apartment in Nottingham. I found this out the other day. I've been telling everybody. I can catch a train from my apartment in Nottingham to Saigon.
What?
Right?
How is that possible?
Exactly. The problem is, the only part of the journey I would struggle with is the Channel Tunnel between...
Oh, Jesus,
you know?
Dan Hardy.
Like, apparently one train has to stop while the other one goes past
no,
because the pressure would just like...
No! Fuck that. They go under the ocean?
Under the ocean.
Get the fuck out of here with that shit. That is a movie waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, movie. They will tell your story for many, many years in the future. Get the fuck out of here,
that's
man.
It's like a Titanic kind of movie, isn't it?
Fuck that movie. That movie sucks. You do not want to be in that movie. No. You don't want to be dude in tunnel.
Pins of concrete under seawater.
Just seeing the rocks tumbling towards you. Enormous rocks with walls of water behind them, pushing them. Rocks that are thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of 10, 15 seconds before they hit you.
And you're
and
so minute in that circumstance as well. You're so insignificant.
Yeah, you don't matter, bitch. You are a footnote in history, and that's a wrap, son!
Yeah.
Clean her up! You're clear, Mr. Hardy. Thank you for playing this life.
Yeah, that's why I didn't go to that airport.
Yeah. Good move, son. Good move. Now that you put it that way.
Can I bring up that funny thing that I saw?
No. No, no, no.
That's so funny.
No. No, because I'll get mad. It's unfortunately.
It's so funny.
Dan Hardy, you recently went to the jungle.
I did. I went to the jungle.
You recently had an experience in the spirit world.
I did.
Doesn't that sound like a ridiculous thing to say?
It does.
You sound like one of those bead-wearing, fucking Birkenstock-wearing assholes. Like, if you say something like that, like, I went to Spirit World. Oh, yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
You fuck?
Hey, and I do yoga like 5 times a week now. I'm really not helping my cause at all. I've got the beads.
Yeah, you got the beads.
Yeah.
There's like a certain thing to it. It's like, it sucks when someone's faking that thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I'll just burn some white sage and it'll be better. It's like, you know, you can see those people from a mile away, though.
I know a guy. I know a guy who's like that. Preys on older women.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's got this older woman. She's quite a bit older than him and less attractive than him, but he's young and fairly useless and like this fake guru type character.
You know, there's a documentary, I can't remember what it's called. It's on Netflix, and it's a guy who... He goes out to... Have you seen it?
Yes.
Goes out to India.
No, I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
You've got to watch it.
He makes a fake religion.
A fake guru, yeah.
Yeah, he becomes a fake guru. Let's see, documentary on fake guru.
I don't know what it's called.
Netflix just pulled the plug on like 2,000 live movies. They just
did they really?
Yeah,
why?
Because they lost contracts with I think it was Warner Brothers or something.
Oh,
but like
no.
South Park's gone. Like a lot of is gone from it right now.
Kumar is the movie.
It. Yeah,
a true film about a false prophet.
Yeah. It's worth a watch. It's kind of interesting. It's
fucked how easy it is to trick people. That's unfortunate. You know, it's people want. But you know why I think this is why I think is because it's an insanely rare quality to be truly enlightened, or even truly on the path of enlightenment, a true path of enlightenment, with true focus, and you know, and on a path for the pure sake of trying to figure out what this life is and figure out how to live this life better. There's so few people really, really doing that that to even like attempt to do it is so douche-ish.
It's intimidating to think for yourself, though. I think that's where a lot of people fall, you know? It's scary to think for yourself, so they want somebody else to do it for them.
It is, but it's also we don't like people proclaiming that they're something more grand than the rest of us.
Yeah.
Some people, we don't like people proclaiming that they're on the path to figuring it out, where you're screaming in your car at a red light and you can't balance your checkbook and, you know what I mean? People don't want to believe that there's a guy who really does do yoga every day and really does like find his center and it's made him a more joyous person. This is what I hear from you. A lot of you talking about you, buddy. That's what I hear. A lot of you being impressed with yourself. A lot of you're fucking annoying with your flip-flops, and that's what happens.
Yeah.
It's like there's so many of those guys. There's so many, but it's. I had this Dr. Amit Goswami in here once, the theoretical physicist guy, genius guy, and he was saying that sometimes people have to fake things in order to really truly make them happen. Like I let people. He's like, I let people use the word quantum when I know they don't really know what it means. But he's like, but if this guy like has interest in like faking it, like maybe it would lead to a real interest in trying to understand quantum science.
Maybe.
And I was like, wow, that's a fucking interesting way to look at it. And see, like, so I go, so like false gurus and play, goes, just let them fake it. Which I guess, but you know, then they start, you know, fucking everybody's wives and.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Killing all the male babies, you know. It always goes south.
Always.
And it's always a man running shit. Has there been a woman-run cult ever? Can you tell me that? There's a fucking...
I can't think of one.
Just that alone is great evidence that women are way less dangerous than men.
Yeah. They have less of a desire to control their environment.
Yeah. Even if you have a shitty woman boss,
yeah.
She ain't no cult leader.
No.
Oprah's the closest woman cult leader.
Yeah,
she's the closest to a woman cult leader.
Yeah, she is.
Because she kind of is. Yeah, she's kind of running a cult.
Mm.
She's running a cult of happiness amongst women over 35.
Chardonnay cult.
The Chardonnay cult. Yeah, yeah. That's her shit. I guess she could run a cult. You know, but like, there's not a lot of women who could pull that off and run a cult. Think about.
Imagine what the world looks like from her perspective.
From Oprah's perspective. It's got to be insanity. First of all, how many women have ever achieved that before? How many? It's not like you're a man. If you're a man and you're like a media mogul, it's like, oh, look, another one. Another Richard Branson. Another this, another that, another that guy, this guy. There's always a new guy. There's always some new guy who's a big loudmouth who's on TV all the time and makes a lot of money. There's always that guy.
Yeah.
Well, how many of those girls? How many girls have just had all these women screaming and cheering whenever they see her? She gives away cars and shit.
Yeah.
Saves people in Africa. How many girls? What is it? Is there one other one ever? Angelina Jolie is kind of like rocking it in some sort of weird way. But she doesn't have like a talk show.
No.
Where she's talking every day. She's
like an control.
Actress.
That's like control. That's like you can give people instructions and they'll follow it. Go and buy this and millions of women will go out and buy it. That's scary power.
Yeah, Oprah power is weird power. Mm. It's very rare that a human achieves that.
But she can't. She has to have sacrificed like real relationships with people. Like you can't have a real connection with anybody, or you can't develop new connections when you get to that kind of status. I don't think so.
I wonder.
How could you ever let anybody in?
I don't know. Well, the only reason you wouldn't is if you think that you're better than other people because you're successful.
Mm.
The issue of running into people that want to take advantage of you, you're going to have that no matter what. You know, you would hope that your filter is good enough that you'd be able to.
But when it gets to the stage where you can't go anywhere without someone recognizing you, you're like everybody knows who you are.
Yeah, you fucked up, son. You took it too deep. Should have backed off, Elvis. Maybe you would have stayed alive longer.
Never go full retard.
Yeah, there's something that happens to people when they get that cuckoo famous. Yeah. You know, they get that over the top.
Like Justin Bieber's. Bieber.
Oh, he's gone. This young man's gone.
He tried to take a monkey to Germany the other day.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck is that?
Well, that's what you do when you're fucking 17 years old and you fucked a million girls a day for the past year. And you look like you're four.
Yeah. And he thought they were being unreasonable because they wanted to take his monkey off.
They are unreasonable. He's Justin motherfucking Bieber. Justin Bieber, he could go to a restaurant and like put his hands up and say, hello, everybody. And they would start cheering. Mm. They would start clapping.
Yeah. Twerping.
Justin Bieber's here. Swag. They would go, oh, my God, he just said swag.
What's
but
that?
But that's his thing. He says swag all the time.
How do you know that?
I know a lot of
them. Wait a second.
We've talked about it on the podcast, you fucking stoner.
Swag?
Yes. You don't pay attention to things like
that.
You block me out
like
a, like, a, like an old marriage.
Swag.
You block me out like we're married.
Beaver swag.
He's I know a dude who has done work for Mr. Bieber. He says he's a very nice guy.
Hmm. I met his
dad. Nice kid. Yeah, I met his dad too. I met him and his dad at a UFC fight.
Really?
Met him like very briefly. We had headphones on. They shook our hands. Hi, how you doing? And then the fight was going on. But no one could ask anyone to be able to handle that situation any better than that kid's doing. He's doing way better than I would do. Could you imagine what fucking damage you would have done if you were that famous at 17? That must be ridiculous.
Yeah, I did enough damage at 17 and I was nobody.
Just, what kind of life is that? That guy lives, there's only one person on the planet that lives like that. That's him. Like, who's he going to compare notes with?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who's going to understand his life?
Like Britney Spears was that kind of level at one point, you know?
Yes.
Then look what happened to her.
She went crazy. She blew a fuse.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited for Justin Bieber to lose his mind as well. I mean, it's coming. but it's just, how is it going to happen, you know? Is he going to start buying, like, wild animals and fill his house with them, or...
It's money in the bank. I used to do a joke about, before Macaulay Culkin went crazy, I used to do a joke about... Oh, he's money in the bank. It's like, this ain't going to turn out well. This is you. You're not always going to be that guy. You're going to be like a man someday. Like, that's going to be weird. Like, you became unbelievably famous while you were a child.
Yeah.
How could you possibly handle that?
Hanging out with Michael Jackson.
Jesus Christ. You know, there was a guy who got arrested. He was like one of those famous Hollywood like investigative guys, like a strong arm investigator, and he had done some work with Michael Jackson. And what he says is that he wanted to check in and make sure that all the molestation allegations were incorrect. And he said he wouldn't work with Michael Jackson because he did something worse than molest them. What that means? You know, I couldn't even imagine what the fuck that means. But it was enough
spin on things.
It was enough that he wouldn't work with the guy.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true. I mean, he's in jail. The guy who did it is in jail, and he did a lot of nefarious, semi illegal type shit. Did a lot of strong arm shit, you know? But it seems like he had a little bit of a code. And it seems like whatever Michael Jackson was doing, according to him at least. That's scary, man.
Wow.
We were talking about Cleveland. We were talking about what happened in Cleveland before the show
That's
started.
Insane.
Yeah, these guys, these three brothers, had kidnapped these three girls and kept them locked up for 10 years.
So they each got one?
I don't know. I don't know what they did. I don't know the full details of the story. But the guy who saved him is this black dude. He said that something happened, and I think he heard some screaming. And, like, he kicked down a door.
Was he robbing the place? Or?
No.
Oh, he was just nearby?
He's trying to save them.
Oh.
You racist little fuck. I know what you're doing. You're just trying to keep black people from coming to your shows ever. I know what you're doing.
I heard some noises. Oh, I mean, I was breaking into the place.
No, and he said it was a really interesting thing. You got to see the interview. The guy's really entertaining. The guy who saved him. Pull up the interview because it's pretty fascinating. And then don't worry, folks. We're still going to talk about the spirit world. I know we got off subject, but this ain't, you know, this ain't the Conan O'Brien show, bitch. Doesn't all
go
streamlined.
Are you getting requests?
No, I know people want to hear that, though. I know they do. I can't listen to requests, like, while the show's going on. Too many people would just write fucked up shit to try to get my attention.
Ramsey.
What's that?
This one?
His name's James Ramsey. Is that his name?
Yeah, James Ramsey.
Yeah.
Charles Ramsey.
Charles Ramsey. Guy's a bad motherfucker. He saved those girls. They were in there for 10 years. These guys were holding them captive for 10 years. Like, what the fuck happens to people that allows them to do something like that?
I don't know. Like, it's what is their view of the world? Like, how do they see their own actions?
How did they get to be that thing?
Yeah.
How did they? That's the real question. Who did something to them?
They must have peace with it in some way. 10 years. Oh, 10 years is a long time to have second thoughts, you know. Just
I mean, I think they were just they owned them. That they were going to keep it that way.
Yeah. But how do you come to the conclusion that that's okay?
I don't know. I couldn't imagine.
I have this conversation with the people about Michael Vick. You know, I'm always kind of vocal about that and that situation with the dog fighting.
Here's the dude.
Huh.
Pause it for a second, because I want to hear what you say, have to say about this, because, yeah, I that disturbs the shit out of me, too, the Michael Vick thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I was up in Utah a couple of weeks ago for the Victory Dogs reunion, which is basically the dogs that were saved. I think they took 58. Some of them were euthanized because they were too bad, but most of them were taken to a place called the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, and some of them will stay there for the rest of their lives because they can't be with other dogs and, you know.
Right.
Like
they
the
can't
grand,
socialize.
Like, yeah, like the yeah. grand champions and stuff yeah. that you had, yeah. all scarred up and stuff. But a lot of them got adopted, and all the families stay quite close, and they bring the dogs together so they can socialize. But you know, like some of these dogs have got chemical burns on their back. There's one little dog that walks sideways because it was thrown against the wall as a puppy. Like how do you get to the stage where you think that that's an all right thing to do? Like that's not you don't get better from that. That's not something that and now he's got another dog. Like, you showed up in a PetSmart the other day with, like, this... It's like some kind of military dog.
You should not be allowed.
Yeah. You know?
How is he
If there's anything right
dogs?
With the world, that dog's going to go for his throat at some point.
How is he allowed to have dogs?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
After all the dogs he killed.
But you don't heal from something like that. That's something that... That's just something... That's who you are.
Well...
I don't think he can change.
What is the story? He killed a bunch of them, right?
Yeah.
How did he kill them?
Yeah.
Like, electrocuting them?
Throwing them on the floor, electrocuting them, hanging them...
Yeah, he did, like, torturous shit.
Yeah, he had a bad reputation in the dogfighting community.
Oh, my God.
Like, 58 dogs he had.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He had a bad reputation in the dogfighting community. You know you're a cunt when the dogfighting world is like, man, you need to settle the fuck down. Yeah. You're being mean.
Yeah, that's a whole new level of mean.
Holy shit.
Like, I have a friend who adopted one of his dogs, and this little dog... When you take it into a room, it will go and sit in the corner and shake.
Oh, God.
And you can't go near it without it just shaking uncontrollably. And that was I think they call them bait dogs, where basically they put a muzzle on the dog and use it as like a confidence builder for the fighting dogs that are successful.
Oh, God. So it just... You know? But this guy's had a dog that they bullied.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But this guy's got another dog now and he's back playing football and everyone's cool because he's an athlete and, you know. That's not a normal human being. That's not, you know.
I agree.
It's not a regular calculation to make.
Well, it's also, when do you forgive? There's certain things that we don't forgive, right? Mm. I mean, we don't forgive child molesting. No one forgives that. When a person wants to rape kids, like, you're off the menu for civilization, pretty much universally.
Yeah.
But when you look at what some people are willing to accept, it's clearly... There's like a sociopathic characteristic to that. There's a cruelty characteristic. But can a guy learn from that? We know they can't learn from child rape. They can't. The recidivism rate is way too high. Whatever it is, it's way too sick. Mm. The danger that they pose is way too great. It's like there's too much at stake.
Yeah.
But the idea is like a guy that used to treat dogs like they're shit and kill them. Should we give that guy a second chance?
But the thing is, I don't think he can change his opinion on his actions. All I think he can do is realize that other people don't find it acceptable.
Well, yeah, there's that. But there's also that he, his culture, like he grew up. Like from the time he was a little boy, like they had dog fights. Mm. Like there's a lot of people in this world today that still engage in like really regular dog fights.
Yeah.
And if you are unlucky enough to be born in that environment, when do you make your own moral distinction?
Yeah. Like
when do you realize that this is a terrible thing?
But even so, there's dog fighting and dog fighting. I mean,
right.
You know, like if you read Sam Sheridan's book, A Fighter's Heart,
yes.
There's a bit about dog fighting in there, and it's, I mean, I don't agree with it, but it's a very, very different perspective.
Uh-huh.
You know, they care for the dogs, they look after them, they buy them the best food and, you know, really take care of them, and the dogs fight for honor, you know. It's,
right.
Which, I mean, it's still a kind of an unusual perspective, but the stuff that Vic was doing was just evil.
Evil.
Which, yeah. Which is a whole new level entirely, and that's the kind of stuff that you can't heal from, I don't think. That's the person that he is. I met him once, and I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
I met him backstage. I'm glad I don't meet him now, because I don't know if I'd want to be anywhere near him.
How did you feel when you met him?
I didn't know who he was. And
oh, okay.
He's just, yeah. When my friend confronted him about what he'd done to the dogs, he said he was hoping for some kind of like aggressive reaction, like he was hoping that the guy was at least going to have a feeling about it. He said, but whatever he was talking to Michael Vick about, Vick was just like, just not there, just not present. You know, he didn't understand what was going on.
Oh,
not
wow.
A very smart guy, just, you know.
Joe, have you seen the Charles Ramsey 911 call? I heard that's just terrifying. Somebody just sent it to me with captions.
Yeah, sure. Throw it up.
What you're about to hear is a 911 call placed by hero Charles Ramsey after he found Amanda Berry, a woman who had been kidnapped for the past decade. This man saved her life.
5:52 p.m., 34 seconds, May 62013.
Cleveland 911, police, ambulance to fire.
Yeah, hey, bro, I'm at 2207 Seymour, West 25th. Hey, check this out. I just came from McDonald's, right? So I'm on my porch eating my little food, right? This broad is trying to break out the fucking house next door to me. So there's a bunch of people on the street right now and shit. So we like, well, what's wrong with you? What's the problem? She like, this motherfucker been kidnapped me and my daughter, and we've been in this bitch. She said her name is Linda Berry or some shit. I don't know who the fuck that is. I just moved over here, bro.
Sir,
you know what I mean?
Sir, you have to calm down and slow down. Is she still in the street?
Seymour Avenue.
And right? Is she still in the street, or where did she go?
Yeah, I'm looking at her. She right now. She calling y'all. She on another phone.
Is she black, white, or Hispanic?
She white, but the baby look Hispanic.
Okay, what is she wearing?
White tank top, light blue sweatpants. Like a wife beater.
Do you know the address next door that she said she was in?
Yeah, 2207. I'm looking at it.
Okay, I thought that was your address. So that house.
No, I'm smarter than that, bro. I'm telling you where the crime was.
Do you want to leave your name and number? Or name
Charles
and number?
Ramsey, R-A-M-S-E-Y.
What's the phone number?
Okay, if there's any justice in the world, this guy becomes fucking huger than Kim Kardashian.
That was Jules off Pulp Fiction, I'm sure of it.
Yeah,
that's what sounds like.
That? This is real.
I know.
Can you ask her if she's funny about it?
This is a real guy.
She needs everything. She's in a panic, bro. I guess she's been kidnapped, so, you know, put yourself in her shoes.
We'll send the police out. Thank you.
There you go.
There you go. That guy's a bad motherfucker.
You got to get him on the podcast.
Fuck yeah, we do. We have to make that guy president.
Wow, that was amazing.
That's a real man.
So he was breaking into that place, right?
Brian.
I was coming from McDonald's, and there was somebody trying to break out of the house.
She's trying to break out of her house,
man. How was she breaking out of the house? Like, was she, like, punching through a window? Or
I don't know. She climbed out somehow. Somehow or another, she got out of whatever they had locked her up in.
Wow.
Crazy shit, man. 10 fucking years and thinking that's going to be the rest of your life, having these guys just fuck you, hold you down and fuck you every night and feed you fucking oatmeal. Oh, some rundown house in Cleveland. You're a sex slave for the rest of your life.
So what do you do with those guys?
Kill them. You got to kill them. They just got to remove them from the gene pool.
But don't you think there's something kind of sinister about like laying somebody down on a on a bed and inject in them to like put them down.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary. I think you just dig a hole, shoot him in the head, push him in the hole. Yeah. I really don't think you need to be fucking with all this injection.
It's so clinical, it makes it scary.
Well, that's what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do is take the chaos out of murder.
Yeah.
They're trying to take all the variables out. Let's going to do it nice and easy. A little poison. Here you go. Okay, you're dead. Goodbye. Take care. That's crazy. It. That's a wrap. Instead of just shooting someone. You know, I mean, did you ever see that movie Dead Man Walking?
No.
Sean Penn's a bad motherfucker. I mean, that guy knows how to act his ass off. He's a crazy dude, but he knows how to act his ass off. And he played this guy that was dying. He's going in for lethal injection. And the way he played it was so real. Like, you really thought he was going to fucking die. And that's all avoidable, man. Mm. All that craziness of strapping that guy in and freaking him out and injecting him so that you can feel better.
Yeah.
Just shoot him in the fucking head and let's be done with this, okay? It's real simple. That's a bad person. He's broken. We got to get rid of him. Shoot him. Okay, there we go. Whew. Like they do on The Walking Dead.
I think they should put him in a trough first at like a Skynyrd concert and we all get to like piss on him for like, or something, you know, like something cool like that first.
That's not cool. That's just weird. Yeah, let's piss on him. Something cool. Hey, what do you want to do today? Something cool? Let's piss on each other. So, tell me about your journey in the jungle.
Okay, where was that all start? About?
What happened? What caused you to want to do this?
I don't really know. I don't really know. I felt like I was drawn to it. I was speaking to a friend of mine. I won't mention him, but he's another fighter, retired now. And he did a couple of ceremonies in London, a friend's place. They brought a shaman over and did a couple. And I've always been kind of the guy that if I wanted to experience something, I would go to the source. You know what I mean? I would like if I wanted to do kung fu, I go to China. And if I want to wrestle, I come to America. And you know, if I want to try ayahuasca, I go to Peru. It just kind of made sense. So. It was kind of like my reward for getting through the Dwayne Ludwig camp, because that was obviously, you know, that would have been a fifth loss in a row and obviously a complete change in career paths. So I just kind of, you know, I put 12 weeks aside to dedicate myself to that fight and, you know, with that as a reward after. And a couple of days after the fight, I flew out and spent 2 weeks there. Did a tobacco ceremony on the first day, three ayahuasca ceremonies and two San Pedro ceremonies.
Damn.
How is that tobacco ceremony?
Yeah, what is the tobacco ceremony?
They basically make a drink of tobacco, coffee, and sugar, and they cook it up, and then you drink a whole load of it. And it's like a purge, like a detox. Like, if you've got any kind of toxins in your system, you throw up and you sweat, and some people were crying, and obviously there's all kinds of other nasty stuff that goes on as well, but... It's a way of like cleansing your body before the ayahuasca.
Is it a theoretical cleansing or does it actually have a cleansing effect?
It's got a cleanse. Fortunately, I'd been in training camp for 12 weeks, so I'd been on a clean diet, and I just kept my diet clean until I got to Peru, because there's a special diet for the ayahuasca.
Yeah, it's a low acidic diet, right?
Yeah,
it's
no salt, alkaline. No sugar, no oils, no sex, no spices.
No oils?
No oils.
Really?
Yeah.
Why no oils?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there are a lot of things on the list that I'm kind of on the fence about, and it's weird because there's not really any kind of science behind it. I mean, there are some things that you can't have because they react badly with the medicine, but some of the foods are kind of odd.
Right.
I just kind of go on instinct when I'm dieting for it.
Right. Now, so the tobacco ceremony, there's no psychoactive effect?
No, nothing. No. It's just like smoking three packets of cigarettes and drinking six Starbucks all at the same time.
So mixing it all together, that sounds like the future of smoking. I want to do that.
Okay, so
and I don't drink coffee. I don't drink caffeine or obviously smoke cigarettes. So I'm like sitting in my room like shaking and sweating.
Wow.
It was kind of uncomfortable.
Wow. Yeah.
But once that was over, the next day was the first ayahuasca ceremony. And I did feel real sharp the next morning. I felt very very alert.
Okay, so the next morning you do the ayahuasca ceremony.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, you don't eat a great deal during the day. We had a light breakfast and then, you know, like a fruit snack around midday. And then after that you fast and the ceremony starts at 8 p.m. The idea is that you go into the ceremony with intentions, the things that you want to, questions you want to ask. There's always this talk about ayahuasca, the spirit of ayahuasca, Mother Ayahuasca, and some people during their experiences have an interaction with a female entity of some point, of some sort, but I didn't. but the intentions are still very important. Going into the ceremony with, you know, with questions about myself or my life or whatever, really. For me, the answers just kind of manifest. They just kind of show up. I just kind of all of a sudden get an overwhelming feeling of the right answer. I don't really know how to explain it better than that. It's kind of, the problem is that I really feel like we've not got the language to explain this kind of stuff at the moment. We need to expand it, our vocabulary to encompass all the, you know, all the stuff that we experience in these things.
Yeah, there's a lot of people believe that what psychedelic states, even if they don't believe in that you're really contacting the spirit world, what they think you're doing by forcing yourself to take a hard look at yourself and address some questions that you might have one way or another, but to do it with this stuff that absolves your ego. Mm. It removes the ego. Mm. And in doing that, it's a rare state that you get to get the fuck away from your ego. But it really lets you get away from it to a point where you can see things so much more clearly.
Yeah.
And you can realize how much of the ego has just been sort of tricking you and deceiving you and making you believe that you're either something that you're not, or you've gone further than you really actually have, or your ego has allowed you to sort of delude yourself, to get by this very strenuous existence. Mm. And when you go into a psychedelic state, it allows you to bypass all that and see it. And it doesn't, you know, that's where, like, people don't understand that you can get to a mild psychedelic state from exercise and yoga.
Yeah.
You get, I mean,
and fasting,
yeah,
and meditation, and yeah,
you can get there just to, in sensory deprivation tanks, you can get to a pretty extreme form with no drugs at all. Mm. But the ayahuasca ceremony is basically known as probably the grand mal of the psychedelic experiences, the most spiritual of the psychedelic experiences.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful in comparison to other things I've experienced. It's.
Have you ever experienced the raw form of DMT?
Yeah. Only once, though.
Was it 5-MeO DMT or was it NN DMT? There's two different kinds. One,
5-MeO. Okay.
5-MeO, yeah. Okay. 5-MeO is quite a bit different.
Yeah.
It's there's no visuals. It's a very intense feeling of connection, and it's very, very potent. In fact, I think it's like supposedly, obviously I'm not some sort of a scientist here, but supposedly it's even more powerful gram per gram than DMT is.
Really?
But the DMT, the NMDMT, is what you're getting in the ayahuasca.
Okay.
When you eat it, if you tried to eat DMT, there's a stomach chemical produce. Your stomach produces something called monoamine oxidase, apparently, and that breaks down DMT. So what these brilliant people that live in the Amazon have figured out how to do is mix the vine of one plant with the leaves of another and cook it all together. So they introduced a natural MAO inhibitor.
Doesn't that blow your mind?
It's insane.
Blows your mind.
Did you ask them how they figured it out?
No.
Terrence McKenna did, and he said that they always said that the plants told them how to do it.
But, you know, I've always thought about this with diet. Like people have been combining, like, incomplete proteins for years, like milk and cereal and rice and beans.
Right.
And not knowing that those two things combined made a complete protein. So why would they combine them?
Yeah, it's funny,
you know,
right?
What I mean? It's like an odd coincidence. But ayahuasca is like the same thing, but way more extreme.
Well, there's a lot of folks that believe. I shouldn't say a lot of folks, but it's been speculated. I've read work where people believe that what we've created with civilization and with societies, and especially with like modern societies, where there's like mass speed communication, it's like people are sending each other text messages and watching television, all this, is that we're missing out key information that is there in nature. And that literally, if you're in a natural state, like if you're living in a natural state and you're away from the distractions and the madness of the fucking civilized world, that there's literally a signal that you can't quite pick up anymore. And that signal is like a guide to get through life. And that, like, the earth literally does talk to you.
Is that the collective consciousness, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I believe that it ever really was the case, that people were much more sensitive to the language of the earth. I mean, it is possible. I think it's really hard to even wrap our heads around what it must have been like before there were language. Yeah.
And all the toxins that we've produced as well, all the things that we've introduced to our diet and to our bodies.
Yeah.
You know, like the dashboard on my truck outside is killing me slowly. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Yeah, it's, you know, they emit all kinds of chemicals and, you know, like fluoride as people are now starting to understand.
Yeah, fucking fluoride's bad for you.
Yeah.
How nutty is that?
Yeah, calcifies your pineal gland.
Supposedly. I don't know if there's been any real studies. I have a feeling that might be something that someone just said once and everybody just repeats.
I can take it out and I don't mind. I don't, you know?
Well, I don't think there's necessarily a lot of evidence that it's good for you.
Yeah.
I think people say that there's a connection between putting fluoride in the water and removing tooth decay. But that also coincided with education about brushing.
Mm.
I mean, that shit went down when people realized that you have to brush. You know, and then putting fluoride in your toothbrush, in your toothpaste, apparently that's not so good either.
Mm.
Even though you don't eat it, it's still, it's like there's a reason why you don't swallow that stuff once you
foam it up in your mouth. The drinking water, though.
Yeah. Fucking it's crazy.
Yeah.
But why do we still do it, though?
I don't know.
I'm sure there's some grand scheme that someone will send me a tweet about, and I'll spend the next 4 hours festering over it.
What the fuck? I think these are things that are potentially like keeping us disconnected from this whatever we're missing out on, this language that we're missing out on from the.
Maybe it's possible, but I think that if you were living in the jungle and you needed to survive there, it is possible that you would at least have an idea of mixing these two things together and cooking them.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if you found out you were right? Like, when you created ayahuasca, I mean, if the dude just nailed it the first time, like, yeah, let's see what we got here. Takes a sip.
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. He must have been like, God damn, did I knock it out of the park.
Yeah. Well,
fuck your vegetable soup. I got some shit that will kick your dick right into the dirt, son.
But look at the guy that found that discovered LSD.
Yeah, Albert Hoffman. Yeah.
Like, completely an accident.
Not only that, he, like, rode home and thought he was going mad.
Yeah. Was he like cycling home or something?
Yeah, imagine fucking that bicycle.
First LSD trip ever. and then didn't he go back a couple of days later and take like five times the amount or something?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the initial amount he took was way higher than like a normal dose.
Okay. It's like a bucket.
I think it came in through his fingers,
yeah.
I think. Because that's the thing about acid. It'll go right through your skin.
Mm. Yeah.
I've had that happen.
That's exciting, yeah. Isn't it?
Like, yeah, for the first time, the first dude to figure out ayahuasca, how long ago was that?
Yeah.
They say it's at least 2,000 years.
Yeah.
They say they've shown, like, archaeological evidence of ayahuasca use up to 2,000 years ago.
But how do you even, I mean, I can't make sense of it now, and I have a much better understanding of the universe, you know, as obviously science knows it. But, like, back then, when all you know is the jungle... And the plants around you, and how would you even begin to make sense of that?
How would you begin to make sense of that? Yeah, how would you?
And then how do you become an expert at introducing that to other people, like a shaman? Which I find really fascinating, the idea of shamanism.
It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
You know why it's fascinating? Because you've experienced it and you know it's real. To a Joe construction worker lunchbox that's listening to this nonsense right now. You know, I like that Joe Rogan podcast, but every now and then they go off the fucking tinfoil hat deep end and this guy's talking about journey into the spirit world and I want to be a shaman. Get the fuck out of here. Tell me a joke, ass face, okay? That's what you're here for, you fuck.
That guy's a black belt under Matt Serra.
Possibly. Well done. Yeah, you know it's real.
Yeah.
You've done it. You've experienced it. And it's not just real. It's real in a way where you feel sorry for people who haven't experienced it. Because
but at the same time, when I first came back from Peru and people were asking me, you know, is this something that everyone should experience? I was saying yes to everybody, but now I'm not so sure. I think I was walking through the Luxor the other day, and you know, God bless America and all the people that were pumping money into those slots and, you know, smoking cigarettes and drinking beers. But they need to do a lot of self-discovery without an altered state before they would be even ready for that. Like, if you took them and gave them ayahuasca, it would ruin them forever.
Maybe just seeing them at their worst. Maybe they would say that about you if they caught you beating off.
Well, maybe.
You know, you're there, fucking, your eyes crossed, your tongue out of your mouth. And like, yeah, this guy really needs a fucking ayahuasca seminar. You need to get your own life together, son.
Yeah.
You know, they would come down on you.
But it's kind of weird because like the people that find their way to it are already in a place in their life where they're kind of prepared for it, you know.
I think that happens a lot of the time, but I'm not completely convinced that happens all the time. I've definitely heard of people having bad experiences or going there when they weren't ready for it.
Yeah.
I think psychedelic experiences are incredibly powerful, mm-hmm. and to say that people should or shouldn't do it is equally foolish. Because to say that someone should do it is like, how the fuck do you know that guy should do it? What, because you did it and you like it? You know?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I just think, you know, it's a lot to process for someone that's open-minded.
Right.
So for someone that is buying into the Oprah cult and, you know.
Oprah's badass, dude. Don't get it wrong. Yeah, don't get it twisted.
I'd like to take Oprah to Peru.
That's what we need to do.
Yeah.
We need to get Oprah and bring her to the jungle.
Yeah. I think this is the way forward. I think this is how we move to the next stage of our evolution, is we've got to start getting some of these power people and taking them out there. And
I think it's already happening. We haven't heard about it all yet.
I hope so.
Listen, if there really are people, and there really are, that really do have a massive amount of power in this world, and they really do, you don't think that they've wanted to look into that? Like, why would you not want to look in that? If there's anything that could freak you out if you were in the Bilderberger group, you motherfuckers sitting around doing ayahuasca, talking to the great serpent as it breaks down your life and the kind of damage that you're doing to society and civilization and how unnecessary it is and how you're still unhappy even though you're doing it. Even though you're manipulating the banks, controlling the resources of the world, instigating wars overseas, and profiting off of it in some strange fucking shell game that nobody completely understands, you're still not happy, bitch. Mm. And that's what it would tell you. It would be good for everybody.
But what do you think? What do you think if you got the Bilderberg into a ceremony? And
I think they all need to realize that you don't need that much money, you fuck.
Yeah.
Crazy. You're going crazy, asshole. You got caught up in your own game. You got to the point where you're controlling the world's economy and you're worth billions. Yeah. What are you doing? You don't need billions. That's stupid, man. That's dumb. You can have a nice house and food and not worry about shit for way less and never have to worry about a single thing for the rest of your life. Like you're in some crazy stratosphere that no one reaches and you're still trying to make more money. Mm. You're still trying to fuck people over. You're a sick fuck. You're sick.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're broken.
It's very reptilian.
It's very stupid, too, because you could be having a great fucking time every day for the rest of your life. If I had billions of dollars, every day would be fishing. I would fucking go fly kites. I would travel to today we're going to Hawaii. Who gives a fuck? You've got $100 million in the bank. Instead, what are you doing? You're trying to fuck over Portugal. You're trying to steal oil out of the Amazon. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to do? You're fucking cunting up the world.
Yeah.
It's not necessary, but they don't know any better because they're caught up. Just like those same people at the casino. Those people are caught up too. They're caught up in like a hitch in the human mind that allows you to try to solve puzzles and seek conclusions. And you go ching ching and you just hijack that shit with three lemons. Come on, you fuck, I can find the three lemons. They're in there. And then your brain gets locked in this stupid thing. And then the cigarettes, you're sucking on these cigarettes that these same people are extracting millions of dollars from the society by feeding people these poisonous fucking weed-filled tubes that you light on fire. And you poison yourself,
and
nice
then
and slow.
And when they get sick, they give them the drugs to fix it.
Yeah, lots of play. I got plenty of shit to fix. Basically, we're going to knock cancer out of the box in the next couple of years. So you don't have to worry about it, Mr. Johnson. Just keep fucking smoking away. We live in a mad world. We live in a world that should be a movie, and nowhere is that more readily available or honest than when you have a psychedelic experience. Because when you see what mushrooms can do, or we could see what DMT could do, and whether it's in ayahuasca or a regular form, you realize like what there really is like a magic in the world.
There is.
And it sounds so stupid. That if you haven't experienced it, you really would. And even people who have experienced it, they don't want to describe it that way because they don't want to sound stupid to people who haven't experienced it. So they'll go, look, it's nothing magic. Your cerebral cortex gets flooded with chemicals. The visual aspect of your interpretation of the world around you gets hijacked by these new chemicals. And it just fucking gives. Maybe. Or maybe you haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
And if you have done it, maybe you're just cynical. Maybe you're missing out on what the fuck that is. That's some magic fairy dust, bitch. You get to go to a fairyland.
But I do find that I can't speak as openly with people that haven't had that experience anymore.
No, because you sound crazy.
Exactly, yeah. Like I say energy a lot more than I used to. And power, I say powerful a lot.
Do you? Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to say.
I have a lot of power days now.
Do you?
Like sometimes I'll get to the end of the day and I'll be like, yep, that was a power day. Like, I'll be out in the Valley of Fire and, you know, swimming in Lake Mead and stuff. And it's like, yep, today was a power day.
What's your kale count per day?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but thinking that way, like being powerful and thinking positively, that really does change your fucking life.
It does.
And people don't understand that. Like, it is silly. Yeah, it definitely seems silly. It's if you're a serious person who's a conservative man who's not to be mocked and laughed at, you wouldn't engage in such behaviors. But life itself is silly. The whole thing is silly. The whole thing is completely ridiculous. You know? So if you did not, you know, to be worried about looking stupid by trying that out.
Yeah. It's the whole my whole perspective of life changed, though. I quite like the temporariness of it now.
Do you?
Yeah, because the space that I always experience, you know, with the ayahuasca and, you know, other psychedelics like, you know, DMT or psilocybin, I always feel like the place I reach when I've had the right kind of amount is a very familiar, safe place. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've been there hundreds of times before. It's like, oh, I'm back.
You know? Yeah, isn't that the weirdest thing about it?
It's really odd.
The weirdest thing about it is how it feels so comfortable and so normal. It feels so familiar.
Yeah. I think a woman described it in the DMT, the Spirit Molecule book, Dr. Rick Strassman. She said it feels like a waiting room between death and birth.
Wow.
Which I thought was kind of an interesting perspective.
Wow.
I remember my latest psychedelic trip, that it was like just like that, where I'm like, I've been here before. Why can't I remember this? Like, it seems like I do that a lot, like go to the same place so many times.
Yeah, well,
it could just be a part of your brain, you know?
It could, but it's so close to normal human neurochemistry. The most profound ones, they're so close to normal shit your brain produces. Mm. Like mushrooms and DMT are like very closely combined. They're very closely related chemically. Yeah. And DMT is produced by your brain. So all of those experiences are just, they know exactly where to hit in your mind to produce this stuff.
Yeah.
I can't think that that's a coincidence. I can't think that that's an accident.
No. I like Terence McKenna's theory on the introduction of psilocybin into the human diet. When we became, from the canopy-dwelling fruit eaters to the plain-dwelling kind of forages.
I don't know if that holds up scientifically as far as the timeline,
nice, right?
But no, I've never heard anyone say anything more plausible.
No.
There's no real serious explanation.
It was a massive jump forward. It was a huge leap in consciousness.
A doubling of the human brain size over a period of 2 million years.
Yeah.
And apparently that's the greatest mystery in the entire fossil record.
I've always wanted to have a real light dose of mushrooms and fight, like a gram or a gram and a half.
And fight,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I know people who played pool with it, and they say they can't miss. They say they know where the ball is at all times. They feel it moving on the table in three-dimensional space.
Wow.
Yeah, guys used to play pool on small amounts of acid, too, and, like, have the best game of their life.
Why pool, though? I mean, what a waste of LSD. You know?
I guess you'd want to be doing something creative, but if you were a serious pool player, like, that's apparently the way to get really awesome.
Who's a serious pool player?
Me. I play a lot of pool, yeah, for real.
He's a dick.
But, like, not as a job, though. Like, you don't do it like...
I would play professionally, sure.
What about golf, though? I
mean, No. Golf is... First of all, golf, you're out there walking around in the rain. That's retarded. And second of all, you're chasing a ball around. Pool, it's all on this one table. The environment is exactly the same every time. You're not dealing with holes and rolls. And I bet I would love golf. But I'm terrified of trying it and finding out
because
that I love
so
it.
Because it's so unpredictable.
So much work. You're out there 8 hours a day chasing a fucking ball. Yeah. When you play 18 holes, like, that's several hours worth of playing.
That's eight hours of drinking, though, Joe.
Would you enjoy it more with LSD?
Bill Murray did in Caddyshack.
Did you really?
Wasn't that his thing? Wasn't it? He would take acid and play golf.
It's been so long.
I know that people have done it, yeah. It gives you more sensitivity, apparently, more spatial recognition, more understanding of distance.
Depth perception. Depth perception.
And apparently in a way that really you never see this field.
Maybe that's Anderson Silva's secret.
He's on acid every time he fights.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, could you imagine if you no steroids, but you tested positive for mushrooms, fuck. Like, Jesus, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Fighting on mushrooms.
There should be a separate belt for that entirely.
Well, there was a baseball player, a famous baseball player, who pitched a no-hitter while I was on acid.
Really?
Yeah. Who is that? Do you know who it is? Hold on. I'll pull it up. No Hitter on Acid. It was on, during the 70s. And apparently what happened was he wasn't supposed to be pitching. Doc Ellis. He wasn't supposed to be pitching that day. So he decided to get lit up, took some acid, and then like something happened. They called him in, and he had to go play. And he said he was just flying high, and he pitched a no-hitter.
See, I'd have loved to have lived through those days of sport. Instead of these now, these are too regulated, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's go back to those like 1960s and 70s.
Those were crazy days, yeah. But you can't go back. No, they're going to be looking back at this day, thinking how crazy we were as well. It's
I often think of all the things that are we're gonna look back on. Even when I'm old, I'm gonna look back and be like, "Wow, we actually did that." Like I remember people smoking on planes.
Yes, I remember that.
That's crazy.
Yes, like, it's crazy.
I live in Vegas now. I walk into the casinos, I'm like, "Oh,
there's smoke everywhere."
It's like 2 years ago that people stopped smoking in the UK.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I've immediately made the adjustment, though. So, like, in like 30 or 40 years' time, like, when I'm on a plane and we're like, you know, I can't even imagine what it would be like. But we're going to look back at, like, Delta and be like, hell no. I can't believe I ever did that.
Yeah.
I lost my bags. I was stuck between two fat guys sweating on me, you know?
Well, there's going to be one day, I'm sure, there's going to be a better version of that. But the smoking in the sky is the most ridiculous one.
Yeah. Or when like nurses and dentists could like smoke while they're actually working.
Oh yeah,
you know, like
those old
like, working
1950s movies and shit.
Yeah,
yeah, everyone smoked. I was watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers the other day, the old version.
Okay.
Fucking doctor sitting there lighting up in the middle of a doctor's appointment.
You're definitely talking too much about cigarettes today. I'm freaking out.
Yeah, he's junky. He's hooked. But yeah, the do you think that? I mean, it sounds like a crazy thing to say, but do you think that
I'm open
the
to crazy
future?
Things.
I'm sure you are, man. Right? Do you think that the future of the world, like, do you think that it really depends on how many people have psychedelic experiences?
Yeah,
like that. We need to tip the numbers in that direction in order to get a large percentage of people that are at least willing to question the way the whole thing is built.
Yeah.
At least willing to question the way they're living their own lives. At least willing to question what it is we're doing here.
Mm.
What are we doing exactly? Moving on momentum every day.
Yeah.
Getting up when your alarm clock goes off. What the fuck are we doing?
But we're running on, like Terrence McKenna would say, an operating system. And the one that we're running on is prehistoric. You know, everyone's trying to control each other. Everyone's jealous of what everybody else has got, and we really need to get past that and realize that I don't need to be jealous of what anybody else has got because I'm good with what I've got, you know. And just kind of, I don't know. People are not finding peace, so they surround themselves with things that they think make them happy.
We haven't been aware for very long.
No.
I think that's a real problem. I think that the human race is in the middle of waking up and trying to figure out what the fuck it did to get here. And what it can do moving forward. And right now, we're still operating on what it did to get here. We're still operating on the ripples of the effects of everything that's gone on in the past. And so when you say something like that, like, yeah, I mean, people need to do psychedelics, they just immediately dismiss you. Like, you're all this crazy fuck. Like, listen to him. Yeah, people need to do drugs. Yeah, that's what they need to do, Dan Hardy. They need to do drugs.
But the thing is, I don't think the focus should be, well, it has to be psychedelics. It's just about people becoming more conscious, making conscious decisions, and you know, even when it comes to like diet and exercise practice, and you know, just your approach to people and to relationships, to how you deal with people,
right?
Your impact on the world, and you know, and as soon as more people start thinking about that, then we're going to start moving forward. But I think psychedelics is just kind of a shortcut, like you know. It just kind of upgrades you a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
You see things a little clearer. Like before my first ayahuasca experience, I always felt like I was in amongst my issues, like they were surrounding me, and I couldn't really see clearly. I couldn't get the pieces in order to put them together right. And as soon as that first ceremony was over, I felt like I could step back and look at all the pieces in front of me and like piece things together, almost like everything's a game. You know, and I think, was it Tom Campbell you were talking to a while ago? There's a video of you and him on YouTube talking, and he's talking about the idea of
Tom Campbell?
Yeah, Thomas Campbell. I'm sure that's his
name. The soup guy?
I'm sure that's his name. There's like a
and what was it about, what were we talking about?
You know, just the idea, it's like The Matrix, like it's a video game. Like, I,
Oh, I see. I think they combined us.
Oh, okay.
In something.
Yeah, that's a good video anyway. That's a very interesting
video. Oh, yeah, that's what it is. It's there's a lot of people that do these brilliant
videos.
Just
kind of edit them together.
Yeah, they do them on their own. Okay. No one tells them to do it. They just do it. And there's so many of them out there, man. It's incredible.
But, like, I kind of, like, my approach to life now is almost like a video game. Like I'm constantly trying to level up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm constantly trying to get to the next stage to try and like forced evolution almost.
Right.
You know, and I think that like we were talking about this the other day, swimming in the lake, smoking weed, just kind of hanging out, and all of a sudden it all kind of fell into place for me. Like there are certain people that make an effort to reach a higher consciousness. So imagine them as like bubbles on the table. Imagine the table's full of bubbles. And one of those people starts to drift off a little quicker. And that is going to create a reaction of the people around it. And then they're going to pull up. And occasionally you're going to get like a Jim Morrison or a Hendrix or a Martin Luther King. And they just kind of go and just pop and explode. But they cause such a ripple that they start to raise everybody else's consciousness. So I think everybody has a responsibility to raise their own.
Mm.
And by doing that, we're gonna affect the people around us.
That's such a hippie term.
It is.
Raise your consciousness.
It is.
It's like, it sounds
but I am,
like
I am what, a filthy hippie now.
But it sounds like what a dude would probably say if he's trying to fuck you. I'm just trying to raise your consciousness. And just if you and I made love, maybe it'd bring us closer.
Wow, that does sound like me.
Listen, Dan Hardy, I know your trick, son. but what you're saying, though, I agree with entirely, even though it sounds like dirty hippie talk. What you're saying is that we have to kind of realize that the only way to really enjoy this life is you gotta not just bring yourself up, but bring up the people around you, and as they rise up, it'll rise you up as well, and that we really all connected. And it's your ego that keeps you from seeing that.
Mm.
It's your ego from trying to separate yourself from all these people that are around you and thinking that you're on your own. But you're not on your own. No one's on their own.
No. And I struggle to come to terms with some things like the way like Michael Vick treats animals or like there's a documentary I tweeted a while ago on YouTube, and I apologize for anybody that watched it because it's the most awful thing I've ever seen. It's called Earthlings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a video of the different ways that humans use and treat animals. And I got to like 26 minutes and I had to stop watching it. It was so difficult. And I always struggle with coming to terms with why that happens. Why is that there? And my conclusion is that because it causes me to have a reaction, to have a feeling about it. So everybody that sees it, everybody that witnesses that, will immediately form an opinion, and that defines them a little further to themselves. We have to ask these questions about how do we feel about that. That mm-hmm. makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't think that that's necessary, and I don't want to watch that.
Well, it also, the reason why that exists, the reason why those things can happen, is that people are willing to overlook normal human morals and values in favor of profits.
Yeah.
And when, as soon as you're the numbers, the one and the zero become the almighty, then you're fucked.
Yeah.
Because then you're caught up in the wave of ones and zeros yourself. You can become just as disposable as anybody else. I mean, you should just, that alone should get people recognize that humanely, if you want to like get through this life humanely, like you cannot only look at the ones and zeros.
No.
Because that's everything that's fucked up about the world. Whether it's war, whether it's manipulation of the markets, whether it's controlling the natural, all of it is about ones and zeros, 100%.
Yeah, and the people that have built this society around us, this operating system that we function under, they've kind of corralled us into a position where we don't have to make these decisions. We don't have to ask these questions about, you know, does the Hummer that I drive drink far too much fuel, and am I having too much impact on my environment around me? Am I an asshole for driving it? You know what I mean? It's that kind of, people don't need to ask
this. And you say this as a man who loves classic cars.
You know, and it's a love-hate relationship. I have my Pontiac sitting in the garage, and I drive it probably once a month, and I've been talking about selling it for a while. And
you're going to get a Prius, Dan Harney? You better not get a Prius, son of a bitch.
I can't do a Prius.
Don't.
But the thing
is,
the thing that doesn't make
any
sense.
Shelby GT500s, the new ones, pretty fucking good on gas.
Really?
Turns out a big, powerful engine that's not working very hard is pretty efficient.
But the thing is, the technology's
there.
Yeah.
Just get the dancing bears around your belly button. That's what I mean.
But it's like in the UK, I had a Kia sponsorship for a while in the UK, and they would give me a new car every time I went back to drive. And
it was like what a thrill!
but seriously though, like it was a 1.6 diesel. It got like 60 miles to the gallon. So mm-hmm. So why is that technology not making it over to the US?
Because it's boring as fuck to drive.
It's like Prius.
There's no soul. You can't listen to Leonard Skinner music where you're driving around in a Kia diesel.
So the option's a Prius that gets 42 miles to
Alabama. Doesn't sound right. You want to hear the engine.
I
you know what I'm saying?
That shit in
boom. You want to be able to shift your own gear, son. All these things that are dying off. Yeah. I'd bemoan that.
But then on the flip side, you know, should I drive a car that drinks so much fuel so eventually we can get through this quicker and then the people that have control of the fuel will lose their power and then we can start thinking ahead, you know, like...
And then we need hemp like diesel to run our muscle cars.
Yeah. You know, it's a finite resource, so maybe we should just get through it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it is a finite resource apparently, but I don't understand how that works. I don't understand how much oil is left. It's, you know, the problem with one of those controversial subjects like peak oil is when you hear those guys talk, you don't know who the fuck is right. You know, this guy's saying that I read a book called Black Gold Stranglehold that was claiming that oil is a repeatedly made fluid. And that
really?
Wells that have gone dry, if you give them enough time, they start producing oil again.
The thing is, though, the only people that know the real facts are the people that are in control anyway. So why would they tell us the truth?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the idea that anybody could own the oil... I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's the whole Earth, you fuck.
But I say this about...
in your metal boxes, Genghis Khan.
But I say this about, like Red Rock Canyon. Like, I'll go out there hiking, and I'll get there at, like, you know, 4:50, and the park closes at 5. It's a mountain. How does it close?
Yeah. You know what that's from? They're tired of picking people's pieces up and having people... They say, listen, you fucks, you can't be out here because it's dangerous and too many of you dummies get drunk and fall off cliffs and die.
I think those dummies should get drunk and fall off cliffs and die. I think that's the way of thinning the herd without us actually going out and shooting people.
I'm with you, son. You know, there was a woman who recently died like this week in France, and she fell from like 900 feet off the top of a cliff. And by the time they got down to her, the vultures had already eaten her.
Oh. Well, that saved carrying her back.
Yes. That's one way to look at it.
But, like, let's just take all of, like, you know, all of the safety precautions that mm-hmm. we have, like, fences around, like, moving parts and,
right.
you know, like, sort of like crossings.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't make it across the street without getting hit by a car. Another thing as well, and I have a lot of people that disagreed with me when I spoke about this on Twitter, 15-mile-an-hour zones around schools. Like, if all the time, when I was a kid, I grew up around cars moving at 15 miles an hour... Why would I ever take them seriously as a threat? You know? Like we need respect for these things, because these things are fucking dangerous.
Fuck yeah, that's totally true.
So we need to learn to be careful about it.
But
it's all about education.
Yes, I agree with you, but to play devil's advocate, there's too many dumb cunts out there that need a sign that gives them an unreasonable speed limit. It's just they slow the fuck down when they're around schools. Like our friends that were talking about speeding and texting, you can't have a 60-mile-an-hour speed limit in front of a school with that asshole driving, okay? Because someone's little kid's going flying over the hood.
But then,
I wouldn't want it to be little Dan Hardy.
Well, no, and it's an awful thing, but the
15 miles an hour is smart because kids also are stupid and they tend to jump into traffic and they, you know, oh my lord, my piece of paper, shit, man, I need to fucking pass this class. And they run out into the street and boom, you got to be able to hit that brake. You fuck. Hey, fuck you, old man.
But I don't ever remember anybody getting hit by a car outside of school when I was a kid. And we had a 40 mile an hour zone outside of my school.
I'm sure someone.
I did see
a
woman get hit by a truck though.
Ooh, Jesus!
She had her groceries on the handlebar.
Oh my God! Yeah. How bad was that?
Bad.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah, bad.
Oof! Fucking A, man. I don't want to see that, but I have. That's the problem with the internet. I've seen everything.
Yeah.
At this point, you've seen so much.
Have you watched the video of the monk setting himself on fire from?
Yes.
I spent a day watching that over and over again.
The one from Vietnam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you prepare yourself for that?
He didn't even fucking move.
No.
He never panicked. No. He stayed in the lotus position until his body just gave out.
Do you think he'd taken something to numb it?
Nope. I do not believe so.
So that's some powerful meditation.
I mean, if you're going to light yourself on fire, what fucking difference does it make how you're doing it? Just light yourself on fire, dude.
It's going to get kind of warm into it.
Did you see the bear eat the monkey?
No.
In Hong Kong? Or Taiwan, maybe? I forget. Somewhere in Singapore? I'm just making shit up now. I don't know where the fuck it happened. In some Asian country, there was a carnival show where a bear was on a bicycle. See, we pull it up, Jamie. There's a bear on a bicycle.
Of course.
And a monkey on a bicycle. And they're going around this ring, and this is it. Pull it way up into the half of it, into it, before the bear loses his shit. Yeah, right before there. So the monkey crap, pull it back. The monkey crashes a bike, and the bear crashes into the monkey's bike when it's on the ground and just decides to eat the monkey. It's like, you know what? Fuck you. So watch this. Boom. The monkey crashes. The bear crashes on him. It's like, you know what? I think I'm just going to eat you. And just fucking mauls that monkey. And they're all grabbing him and pulling the monkey away. And look at this. That monkey is Foxville, son. That bear is just going off on that monkey. It's like, you stupid bitch, you dropped your fucking bike. That's it. I've been thinking about eating you for months. I bet his instincts were, when something goes down in front of you, you just start eating it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's like bear 101, right? If you're a bear and some shit trips in front of you like that, you just start eating. Like, you got a gift from the gods.
Yeah.
How could he not do that?
Why would you not?
Yeah, you don't train bears, stupid. You think you train bears. You train for a little bit. We got him to ride a bike. And while he's riding that bike, he's going, I want to eat that monkey. God damn, I want to eat that monkey.
Not many times you can use that sentence.
Yeah, unless you're Joey Diaz. Then you use it all day. Eat that monkey, cocksucker. So you had all these experiences. Did it make you look at fighting any differently?
Yeah, yeah. This is going to sound kind of odd because I carried on fighting after the experience, but I kind of saw the futility in it, the pointlessness in it, you know?
Right.
I mean, there's a British comedy that that kind of captures it really well. They do like a parody of a soccer commercial, and they're like, you know, talking about Manchester United and Arsenal, and they'll win, and they'll see who wins now, and then next year it'll carry on just the same, and there'll be more guys that win, and you know what I mean? It's the same thing. Like, I could be the champion for 10 years, but once that 11th year comes, there's going to be somebody else that's a champion, and it will just continue on forever. And it's the absolute core of the capitalist approach to life is to actually beat someone down to take food out of their mouth, which is really kind of odd. And I've never seen it like that before. Normally, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna beat the hell out of that guy. I'm gonna take what he's got. But now I like the competition. I like the actual physical test of fighting. But not for the same reasons, not to like to be more successful and, you know, to.
Can you continue with the same passion, having different ideas of what's important about fighting?
Yeah, because, well, there's one thing that I was really starting to focus on, you know, with the Amir fight, since I went to Peru, with the Amir fight and going into the Brown fight as well. And this is the reason why I would at least like the option to carry on fighting. You know, I would like to be able to get cleared so I can. You know, I don't think I'll go back to fighting, you know, three times a year and chasing the belt because my focus is elsewhere now.
Where's your focus?
Well, there's a space that you get to when. Do you read much Carl Sagan? You read Dragons of Eden?
No, I haven't.
About the tree and brain and the. I'm trying to like understand the distinction between the different areas of the brain. The reptilian brain, which is obviously responsible for all the aggressiveness, the instinctual stuff. The fighting and killing and all that kind of, that's the reptilian brain, the political side of us basically, and then after that, then you've got like the old mammalian brain, which is where we start to make kind of like basic connections with people and understand that if we work as a group, we can, you know, we can survive better. And then the next level up is obviously a higher consciousness, is having deeper understanding, deeper relationships and communications with people around you. But there's a point when you fight where the reptilian brain takes over. And I usually feel it after I've been cracked a couple of times. Like when I was fighting Ludwig at the MGM, I was very conscious for the first, you know, 30 or 30 seconds or so of the fight. And then as I stepped in, you remember he cracked me with that right hand right on the chin, and I rushed him up against the fence. And immediately I switched over to instinct, and it's like being a passenger. It's like I have no conscious decision-making ability in that time. It's all instinct. I'm not focused at all on what he's doing. I'm just reading. I'm just feeling. And I want to find if I can get. I want to see if I can get to that place for a longer period of time. Do you know what I mean? Like, with the Amir fight, I felt like I would slip in and out of it. Like the first round, it was so overwhelming because it was hometown. You know, my name was being shouted, like, by, you know, 8,000 people or something. And you know, I live next to the arena, so it occurred to me that if I lost, that would be on my mind every time I looked out of my window. So the first round, I lost it. I mean, I just kind of moved around and backed up. And when I sat down in my corner after the first round, I apologized to my team. I said, I'm sorry, I just had to get that out of the way. But then the second and third round, I felt like I could reach that stage sometime where I'd just kind of allow my body to take over and just switch off and effectively just watch.
Do you think that's what Anderson's doing?
I think that's exactly what he's doing, yeah. But I don't know as he's aware of himself doing it. Do you know what I mean?
He's just so good. That's how he locks in.
I just think when the fight starts, he immediately switches over. But you can see it in people's eyes. Like, Vanderlei's a great example. If you watch one of Vanderlei's highlight reels where it's got a few of his stare downs, he immediately switches to reptile mode as soon as he's fighting.
That's a great way of putting it with him, too.
It's true. But, you know, and like, Manhoff is another one.
Yeah.
Those guys that have just got that, like, instinctual rage, just kind of comes on. But, and this is why, like, you know, I've always kind of heard the term, you know, you maintain 20% of the things that you learn in the gym in the actual fight. You know, when adrenaline and the actual fight is occurring, you only kind of maintain, like, keep about 20% of what you've learned in the gym. So the idea is, being in the gym, you train yourself to the point where it does become instinct. And then when the fight happens, you just switch to reptile mode, and reptile mode uses the skills that you learn to get the job done more efficiently.
Do you think that becoming more aware or reaching a higher state of consciousness because of your experiences will actually help you, because it'll abandon a lot of the distractions that you present yourself almost unknowingly?
Yeah, well, it helps me. It helps me in training, and particularly when I'm running now, because I used to listen to, like, Pantera and yeah, like, Vision of Disorder when I was running, and I'd work myself into, like, a rage, so I would run to exhaustion. That was kind of how I trained, and I trained all the way through my career like that. And the last couple of fights, I've switched it up. I've been listening to a lot more like binaural beat type of stuff when I'm running, so I could get into more like a meditative stage, you know, doing a lot of yoga as well, and trying to find the same thing where you just you're within yourself and you're not focusing on anything else, so your body's almost like on autopilot.
Yeah, the music that you listen to when you train can have a profound effect on how you approach your training.
Yeah, it really can. It's so important, and that's why I've always been so vocal about all the stuff I listen to. Like, I'd have, like, training camp playlists, so I'd tweet every day songs I was listening to and that kind of thing. It is important. And the other thing as well, like, earlier on in my career, I would use music to anchor feelings. So, like when I fought Ludwig, I used a song called Iron by Woodkid, which was the first time I'd switched it up from England Belongs to Me for, like, you know, a bunch of fights. So, like, for the 12 weeks of that fight, like, I was training with Frank Mir. We were going up to Mount Charleston and out into Red Rock and, like, doing hill running and stuff. And we had some real tough sessions. I mean, you know, we really put ourselves through it for that training camp. And as soon as I got back in my truck after the session, if I felt like it was a good session, it was productive, and I felt positive, I would put that song on. And I would constantly connect those feelings to that song. So then when I'm walking out and that song comes on, immediately I get that feeling again.
Huh.
You know? And it's just like, you know, just like when you listen to a song and you think of a person. Like, oh, I heard that song, right, when I was with that person. And you make that connection immediately. But you can also train yourself to do it.
Yeah.
So that's why I listen to Cypress Hill now, and it will take me back to fighting in Cage Warriors, like, you know, back in 2006.
Wow.
And I have songs all the way through, like, that are now I don't listen to, because it'll, like, my first two fights, I came out to Pantera, dragged the waters. By the time I got to the cage, I was so wound up and so angry that I just ran out of gas immediately. You know what I mean? And now whenever I listen to those songs, I get that feeling of, like, exhaustion, like, oh.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People have, like, sex songs that remind them of sex, songs that remind you of disappointment, songs that remind you of ex-girlfriends.
Why did you connect sex to disappointment?
Well, it's just standard, isn't it? Isn't that how it goes? Most of the time we're just
sex songs, like something crazy from the Spin Doctor.
So what's next from here? If your focus has moved slightly off of fighting, and you still are interested in fighting, and you're still interested in seeing what sort of state you can achieve inside the octagon, what else are you going to do with your time?
Well, I've been having a lot of ideas. I've had a few ceremonies recently with various things, and I've I've got a quite a clear direction of where I want to go. I want to get cleared to fight. I would like to be able to fight again, even if it's just, you know, once a year or once every 18 months or something. And just have a fight with, like, someone that's going to be a fun fight where I can kind of test some of these theories and see where I'm at physically.
Right.
But I'm going to start video blogging my training sessions because I do all kinds of stuff. I do a lot of Bikram yoga, a lot of hot yoga, trail running, kettlebell sessions, and then I want to be able to go into the gym and work on specific things. Like last night I went into 10th Planet Van Nuys and just kind of had a roll around with those guys, and I enjoyed it because it was very, very playful. There was no, like, agenda. I had no agenda because I was in the moment.
You're just learning in the
exactly.
moment.
Exactly. And obviously when you've got a training camp, everything's always, like, I always felt like I was wishing my life away.
Yeah.
Because I'm constantly waiting for a date that's 5-6 weeks ahead. So I'm never in the moment. I'm always in the moment, you know, that's to come.
George was talking about how much he enjoys training in between fights because then he just will go box for like 6 weeks or 8 weeks, just only boxing, concentrate only on that. And then he'll do jiu-jitsu in New York.
Yeah.
He'll go there with Donaher and train with him for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, wants.
I just want to do that. I'm going to take a trip out to Southeast Asia and do a little tour of Thailand. And
are you going to become a shaman, Dan Hardy?
I don't know.
I feel like you are on that path.
I'm moving in an interesting direction, but I want to start kind of promoting a more of an alternative lifestyle of what I'm doing, what with my diet and my, you know, teacher plants, medicines and my approach to training and health. You know, I'm really, really focused on getting strong and flexible right now. That's my main focus. Through, you know, kettlebells and bodyweight exercises and lots of stretching. And I'm just kind of interested to see where this journey is going to go. My goal is to basically get paid to be myself. That's what I want to do. You know?
And to improve yourself.
Yeah. So
and to test yourself.
Exactly. So and you know, kind of, you know, I have sponsors right now that are supportive. Obviously, you know, what with Zions and Fear the Fighter and Venom, and you know, I want them to continue to support me and while I'm on this quest and doing all this kind of interesting stuff. So I figured if I put a video blog out there for people to watch, it's, you know, it gives them
that's a great idea.
A bit more of a connection. Wolfcam, I think I'm going to call it.
Yeah,
Wolfcam.
It's called the Wolfcam. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so
that's pretty good.
Yeah. So I think that's what I'm going to do. I have some other ideas as well. I have a few people to speak to about some business ideas that I have. Again, all within the same.
If it's illegal, don't admit it on this podcast.
It's most definitely not illegal.
Okay, good. At least not in Peru.
No. Like, you know, try and help promote a more clean and conscious lifestyle.
So, what is your diet now?
I'm predominantly vegan now.
You son of a bitch!
I thought we'd get into this. I heard this come up a couple of times.
You went dark on me, son of a bitch.
I'm not giving it a name because it's not really got a name. I'm just kind of my approach to animal products are I will have animal products occasionally if I know that it's from a source that I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like hunted meat or free range chicken
exactly.
or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will eat fish all day long because fish don't even take care of the babies.
That's
my logic on fish.
But
anybody who doesn't eat fish is crazy.
But what about from a selfish point of view? If you don't know where the fish is from, like if you went out to a restaurant and it was just
farm raised is not good. A lot of farm raised stuff is not good because first of all, a lot of times they're exposed to higher levels of mercury, apparently, or higher levels of toxins. Because if you're in like these tanks of water or farms of all fish is shit on each other, and it's
not a healthy
environment. It doesn't taste as good.
No.
I mean, it's better than not eating it. I mean, it's not that bad, but I think that it's been proven that that like when you see like red, deep red salmon, and then you see like the salmon that you get, like this farm raised salmon, where they have to dye it pink. It's been proven that that wild stuff tastes better.
Mm.
There's something better about it.
Yeah.
It's probably better for you. I don't know if it's better for you, but it's probably better for you.
Yeah.
You know.
I tweeted something the other day. I was in a store in Boise, Idaho. And it was a photograph of the ingredients of a bottle of soda, and one of the ingredients was artificial wild cherries.
That's hilarious! So, welcome to America. Monsanto probably owns the patent on artificial wild cherries.
Probably. So we were talking about this, and I got into my theory of stoner language, like stoner understandings of the world, like things that you see if you smoke weed that other people that smoke weed don't. Okay. And that's that kind of thing. Artificial wild cherries.
Wow.
I tweeted it. It's on my Twitter. Yeah.
That's hilarious. It is really funny.
Like people that don't use plants in various ways. Don't see these things. They don't pick up on these things.
Sometimes
artificial
they do.
Wild cherries.
People can. I'm not a 100% proponent of people using marijuana, because I know some people who can't.
Well, yeah,
I know they can't.
But you know, when you hear somebody say something like that, you're like, yeah, that guy's a stoner.
Yeah, there's certain things that people say where you automatically know this guy gets high. But I have friends that seem like they get high and they don't get high. Like Stanhope. Doug Stanhope totally seems like he would get high, but he doesn't get high. He doesn't like it. He says it makes him feel paranoid. He doesn't like it at all.
So maybe some people are just naturally inclined to be like that.
I couldn't tell. You know, I feel like it's obvious when you look at terrible people that someone's brain works different than your brain or my brain.
Yeah.
When you see like a guy like Gandhi, for sure his brain worked different than my brain. There's just no doubt about it. He also had his own path, and he also had his own intentions in his own life. But I just can't imagine that his interpretation of life was the same as my interpretation of life. And if that's the case, how the fuck do I know what pot does to you? Mm. How the fuck would I know? I know people can't smoke it. They smoke it, and then they'll wake up 3 days later with their pants off in the jungle. You know, they're like, I don't know.
Sounds like a good weekend.
Maybe. Unless one of those wandering spiders gets you and gives you a hard on until you die.
I spent 2 weeks walking around the jungle in my underwear.
How dare you, sir? Did you get nervous?
No.
At all? Nothing biting you?
No, nothing.
Did you feel like you had the secret on your side and you're putting out the positive vibes?
I felt like I was very connected to it all. like I wasn't going to mess with anything. They weren't going to mess with me. It was, yeah.
Did you see jaguars in your ayahuasca
trip? I didn't.
Trip?
I could hear it. No. We could hear them, though, yeah. Because the jungle was literally like outside of the...
Oh, dude. You know. Wait a minute. So you're on ayahuasca and you hear jaguars?
Uh-huh.
Jesus!
Yeah.
What do you hear?
You could just hear them fighting. Yeah. Just come into contact occasionally with each other. And
Come on. Does that make you shit your pants?
Not as much as the plane going over. That was really scary.
Oh, the little propeller.
Yeah. We were on flight path for Iquitos, which is like the nearest airport. And like at 8:30 every night, so like 30 minutes into the ceremony. Like we were in, it's called the Malacca, the ceremonial building. It was like a big circular wooden building. And it's got net up to about a meter high off the floor. So you're like in the jungle pretty much. There's not much separating you. And there's all kinds of noises and crazy stuff going on. And it kind of becomes comfortable after a while. But
the bugs are really loud, right?
Yeah, they are. And the frogs as well.
Oh,
but the plane was such an alien kind of sound, because we only heard it a couple of times a day. And the last time we heard it was 8:30 at night, just after we'd had the dose of ayahuasca, and it started to come on. And the next thing I can hear is over my head, and I can feel everybody else's consciousness on that plane. I'm like, I know there are like 250 people up there, and I'm like feeling all of that kind of energy go over. It was really weird, yeah. And it happened every night, every ceremony.
And those third world plane flights, them's a little different, son.
Yeah. Yeah,
chickens in the back tied down with fucking duct tape.
You saw that plane crash that happened last week? That freaked me out.
Did you see that from Afghanistan? There was a cargo plane, and they think the cargo shifted, the load shifted, like it wasn't tied down properly. And when that happens, if the load shifts, the plane just immediately, all the weight goes to the front or the back of the plane, and it just nosedived.
Wow.
Ooh, yeah, wow. It's pretty fucked up. We'll end on that for a nice, beautiful, cheery way. To end, just to let everybody know that you could defy gravity for short periods of time every now and again, but if you fuck up, and or it fucks up, or this mechanical failure, or Jesus Christ, imagine watching that.
Wow. Imagine being on that bus driving past it.
Oh, my God. That bus almost got hit by a plane that fell from the sky.
It's like seeing off Final Destination 16 or something.
One day when we have magnetic UFO-looking things that can't even run into each other because they have magnets on the outside, so they go like this, and they bounce off each other, we'll look at
someone should get on
crashes. I think they're probably already on it.
You think?
Yeah. Well, they always talk about... whenever like serious physicists discuss the possibility of space travel, like interstellar space travel, they like Stanton Friedman, like how could aliens be doing it? One of the things they always concentrate on is some sort of magnetic drive. The guy, Dr. Robert Lazar, he's an often criticized gentleman who claimed to work at Area 51.
Yeah.
But whether or not that guy told the truth, I don't know. But he described some sort of back engineering that they were doing at Area 51, and it was some sort of magnetic drive. The idea is that, you know, you figure out how to use magnets or something to overcome gravity and to create like a little hole in space and time and just fly around through that. Whatever the fuck I even said, Dan Hardy, I don't even understand. I shouldn't. It shouldn't be legal for me to say what I just said because I don't even know what the fuck it means.
Wow. I got really into aliens when I was younger. When I was in my teens, it was like everything was aliens. I really hope I get to experience some kind of contact before I die.
Did you see this latest disclosure, these 5 days of disclosure hearings on Capitol Hill?
No.
Dude. Crazy shit. These different, you know, the real problem with any sort of UFO thing is that it looks silly. It looks silly. You saying you saw a UFO makes you a silly person.
Yeah.
More silly even than ayahuasca, because at least ayahuasca has a great body of evidence to support what's going on neurochemically. But you saying that you saw a UFO, you immediately become a silly person. All these like former military people, all these people that were air traffic controllers, pilots, all these people report these unbelievably unique experiences. And I don't know if they're telling the truth or not, but if they were telling the truth, if just one of these things happened every now and again, of course it would seem ridiculous to us on the outside. The people sitting down here, it's natural to criticize it and make fun of it and laugh at it because it is kind of crazy to think that. But if just one of those is true, if just one of those are a real craft from another dimension, from another planet, you don't think that that's possible, you're silly. If you don't think that within, from here, in every direction, infinite space, what does that even mean? We don't even know what the fuck that means, right?
Can't even comprehend that.
There's got to be something out there that's further
than us. I think it's ignorant to think that there's not.
If we survive, if we little pesky humans figure out how to keep going for another couple million years, who knows what the fuck we're going to figure out?
Yeah.
To think that somebody else can't be out there? And what would we do if someone was out there? We would go check them out.
Yeah, of course.
We'd fuck we'd check them out.
Yeah.
We go to the Congo. We go to the Congo, we check out tribes. We check out tribes of fishermen. They're hanging off fucking trees, picking up fish with nets. We go watch them.
What do you think about the theory of the, you know, the interaction with our history and how they've helped guide us?
It's all speculation.
Yeah.
It's complete speculation. Because you don't know whether or not you look at when you look at ancient drawings, you don't know what's fantasy, you don't know what's a story, you don't know what's their version of fucking The Hobbit. You know, they might make up stories, you know? Who knows? It could be their version of Twilight. That's what, when you look at it, aliens in the wall, it's their version. Like, they told a stupid story to make everybody go to sleep.
Yeah.
Who knows? We know that it's art. We've seen in their art these depictions that closely resemble what we would think to be alien spacecrafts or alien beings, but we don't really know what the fuck it is. Yeah. It's not that much evidence. It's a small amount of evidence. There's a few cool videos, you know, they're like, what is that? I don't know what the fuck that is. I don't even know if it's real. It's hard to tell. But if it happened to you, man, you'd fucking know.
Yeah.
And that's what you can't discount. You can't discount the possibility of unique experience. But once you've had a DMT trip, aliens seem like so passe. It's like...
It's just kind of matter of fact, I think. It's kind of like, well, yeah, of course.
Well, not only that, it's like to have that experience, like a ship lands and they get out, it would be so less bizarre.
Yeah.
Because it's all taking place right here.
You can see it. It's external.
What's taking place also in the dimension that we're comfortable with, where we can walk on the grass and feel the grass, where we step on rocks, we feel the rocks under our shoe, your car's parked over there, you see the clouds above you, and then everything is basically normal except this new introduced element into your environment that you have to now accept. Oh, it's a fucking little dude from another planet. Holy shit, this really is true. That's nothing compared to a DMT trip. Because a DMT trip, the dimension that you exist in becomes of a vibrant, glowing colors with no background and constantly changing geometric patterns that are, they're fractal and they're infinite. That's way crazier than an alien landing.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, we're in an environment now where, particularly with the internet, we've effectively seen most things. Like, I remember when I was in China and I was walking down the street with a friend of mine who was, like, you know, 230-pound ripped black dude, and these Chinese dudes were just in awe. They just stood and watched him as he walked down the street,
like the Green Mile.
Exactly. So then, you know, like, and then think back to, like, I don't know, you know, when the Romans were fighting different tribes and they were taking elephants with them, like when they took elephants to Britannia. Like, there's a tube station in London called Elephant and Castle, which was, you know, this elephant crossing this plane with this dude sitting on top riding it, and the barbarians that were living there at the time just lost their shit and ran away. Like, why wouldn't you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we don't have those experiences anymore because we've seen everything, or, you know, we might see something that's a new species, but it's only a variation of something that's already familiar to us.
Right.
Like, imagine seeing an elephant for the first time if you've lived in, like, I don't know, England.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Like, it would blow your mind.
When did they know that elephants existed? When was it first documented?
I don't know.
By Western world. But obviously, Africans, you know, would be listening to this going, bitch, we've known about elephant for 70,000 years. When did you figure out elephant? You know, they're like, when did the civilized folk learn of the larger animals on the plains? You know, when did they discover? When did people discover elephants? Oh, it wasn't until 1900. But, people got down there, proper people.
Like, imagine when the explorers like first saw a giraffe.
Yeah.
Like, how much would that blow your mind?
Well, I guess we grew up with them, though, didn't we? I mean, if you believe that human life emanated from the lower hominids that existed in Africa and came down from the rainforest into the grasslands, we would have probably been around them.
But would they still not seem unfamiliar if you
It'd
were,
be alien
like
as fuck.
if you were from like Mongolia?
Oh yeah, then it'd be alien as fuck. You know? If you came over from, I mean, essentially, if you go anywhere where you haven't been there before and they have some new shit, you're like, what are you doing with fucking kangaroos everywhere? What the fuck? I have a friend named Eddie Ift. He's a stand-up comic, and he's done very well in Australia, and he goes over there quite a bit. And one of the things he told me was that he first encountered a kangaroo. Kangaroos have killed people, like, many times. Like, they will fucking rip you apart. And he didn't know how big they got. There's two kangaroos, like a red one and a gray one, I guess. One of them is giant. One of them's like 9 feet tall. And he was out in this guy's yard, and he saw this kangaroo, and he thought it was a statue because it was too big. He started walking towards it. So he was like, because it was 9 feet tall.
Wow.
And he was like, well, that's not really a kangaroo. Kangaroos don't get that tall. And his friends go, stop walking and turn around now! Get the fuck away from that thing. And Tangaroo, like, looks at him, and all of a sudden he realizes, oh, Jesus, this is a 9-foot squirrel that's about to fuck me up.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
It's a 9-foot jumping squirrel that will kick your guts out.
Yeah.
Yikes.
But the thing is, like my point still stands over. He's still seen what a kangaroo looks like,
right.
even if he's not expecting a 9-foot one.
Right.
Even if a velociraptor showed up right now in this room, you know,
we've seen it.
We kind of know what they look like. There's no surprises, but an alien landing, that's still kind of a shock to the system. But then again, on top of that, the DMT realm is completely removed altogether.
Yeah, and aliens. The problem I always have with aliens is they look so much like us in the future.
Yeah,
I always wonder whether or not, like, I mean, the grand theory is the simulation theory, that we're living inside some sort of artificial reality, and that the aliens really are us. And that's why we have this weird image of that being us in the future. We're already there, and we didn't like it. It sucks. It's boring. We sort of evolved the fun out of life. So we've created this crazy simulation that we all exist in. That's the grand theory. That's the grand theory involving the aliens, for me at least.
Okay.
That's why they look like us. And that's why they have big black things for their eyes. We fuck the environment so hard that you have to have sunglasses everywhere. You just everywhere you go, you have to have built-in sunglasses. So we just artificially create sunglasses for each other. Just put giant fucking black things over your eyes. Done. There, don't worry about the fucking hyperviolet rays or whatever is out there. And it's jacking you.
We have really long fingers from texting.
Exactly. Well, at that point in time, you probably control everything with your mind. So
yeah,
there's probably no need for muscles. That's why they're so skinny. There's little tiny dudes with giant heads, and they control everything with their minds.
Do you think we could potentially evolve to that state?
Unquestionably.
Really?
No doubt about it. I think that if we can send to this day, this computer's not hooked up to anything, Dan Hardy, but yet it's on the internet.
Yeah.
It's getting the internet through the space around us. You know? You're telling me that can't eventually be human consciousness itself traveling through space, through some sort of a mechanism for generating it or promoting it or projecting it?
Do you know the fart theory, Dan?
It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. You know the fart theory?
I don't know the fart theory.
My alien fart theory is this. If someone farted and you didn't have a sense of smell, you'd have no idea that you're sitting in someone's fart because you can't see it. You know, you really don't know. And farts are like a real fart. You're like, oh my God, and you'll get the fuck out. You close your mouth, but you don't see a damn thing.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, you've been affected by something that you didn't pick up with your normal senses or with all of your normal senses. You heard it and then you smelt it, but you saw nothing.
Yeah.
How do we not know there's not an infinite amount of things all around us all the time that we just do not have the ability to detect or quantify?
So that's your argument for people that laugh at you when you use the word, use the term energy. Like we start talking about energy and stuff and like bros like, oh yeah, yeah, whatever, whatever.
Bros, yeah, bros are always a problem.
You can smell a fart though.
Can smell a fart. Yeah, and you don't know what the fuck that is. That's energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the bigger the dude, more likely the more energy he's going to put out of his farts. You know? I mean, if Tony Hinchcliffe farts or if Joey Diaz farts, which way do you want to lean?
You mean when Tony queefs. Come on.
Hey, easy. Come on, man. Listen, Dan Hardy, you're a bad motherfucker. I'll have you on anytime you're around, man. Anytime you want to come back, we could do this for. I have to leave, otherwise I would keep going forever.
Okay.
But I think you and I could talk for a long time.
Yeah.
And we've been friends for a long time, man. Yeah. You're a cool motherfucker. Like you, and I'm really I'm very appreciative of how you are evolving as a human being. I think it's really fascinating to watch, and I congratulate you.
Thank you.
on your travels.
Thank you. Well, I'll be out helping Mac out and stuff.
You're going to be for a while.
I'll be around in California and.
Let's do it again in a couple weeks.
Let's do that.
Let's do it again. Powerful Dan Hardy. All right, my brother. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for sponsoring this bad boy. Thanks to Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/Joe and use the code Joe4 to save yourself some shekels, son. Okay? Joe Rogan? Okay. If you, I don't know where that came from.
You're talking yourself?
I was reading while I was doing this. Thanks also to Hover. Go to hover.com/Rogan and get 10% off your domain name registrations. And thanks to onnit.com. Use the code name Rogan at O-N-N-I-T and save 10% off any and all supplements. All right, you freaks. We'll be back tomorrow with the great Daniele Bolelli returns the Drunken Taoist podcast to drop some knowledge about religious history and how much bitches like an accent like that. Oh, shit! All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. We love you. And as Joey Diaz says, stay black.